The Knights of the Order of St. John of Jerusalem were established in 1085 as a community of monks responsible for looking after the sick at the Hospital of St. John in Jerusalem. They later became a military order, defending Crusader territory in the Holy Lands and safeguarding the perilous routes taken by medieval pilgrims. The knights were drawn exclusively from noble families, and the order acquired vast wealth from those it recruited. In 1530, Charles V of Spain, the Holy Roman Emperor, ceded the island of Malta to the order. At first, the order's Maltese dominion, which also included the nearby islands of Gozo and Comino, was considered a vassal state. It was for this reason that an annual feudal tax was paid, a symbolic tax, in the form of one live peregrine falcon per year. However, there is a rumor of long standing that the knights, to show their appreciation to the emperor, bade their finest artisans to craft a statue of a falcon, made of pure gold and encrusted with precious gems. Unfortunately, the galleon that was to take it to Charles was attacked, looted, and sunk by Barbary pirates. This was in 1539. Since then, the Maltese falcon has been reported in many Mediterranean and Asian locations, but its real whereabouts, indeed, the very truth of its existence, is unknown. Blackstone Audio presents Michael Madsen, Sandra Oh, and Edward Herman in the Hollywood Theater of the Ear dramatization of Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon. Act 1. San Francisco, California, 1928.
Samuel Spade's jaw was long and bony, his chin a jutting V under the more flexible V of his mouth. His nostrils curved back to make another smaller V. His yellow-gray eyes were horizontal. The V motif was picked up again by thickish brows rising outward from twin creases above a hooked nose. And his pale brown hair grew down from high flat temples and a point on his forehead. He looked rather pleasantly like a blonde Satan. He said to Effie Perrine, "Yes, sweetheart."
She was a lanky, sunburned girl whose tan dress of thin woolen stuff clung to her with an effect of dampness. Her eyes were brown and playful in a shiny, boyish face. "There's a girl wants to see you. Her name's Wonderly."
"A customer?"
"I guess so. You'll want to see her anyway. She's a knockout."
"Shoo her in, darling. Shoo her in."
"Will you come in, Miss Wonderly?" "Thank you. Mr. Spade?"
Spade rose, bowing and indicating with a thick-fingered hand the oaken armchair beside his desk.
She was tall and pliantly slender, without angularity anywhere. Her body was erect and high-breasted, her legs long, her hands and feet narrow. She wore two shades of blue that had been selected because of her eyes. Her hair, curling from under her blue hat, was darkly red. Her full lips, more brightly red. White teeth glistened in the crescent her timid smile made.
"Now, what can I do for you, Miss Wonderly?"
"Could you...
"Suppose you tell me about it from the beginning. Then we'll know what needs doing. Better begin as far back as you can."
"That was in New York."
"Yes."
"I don't know where she met him. I mean, I don't know where in New York. She's 5 years younger than I. Only 17. And we didn't have the same friends. I don't suppose we've ever been as close as sisters should be. Mama and Papa are in Europe. It would kill them. I've got to get her back before they come home."
"Yes."
"They're coming home the first of the month."
"Then we have 2 weeks."
"I didn't know what she had done until her letter came. I was frantic. I was too afraid she had done something like this to go to the police. Yet the fear that something had happened to her kept urging me to go. There wasn't anyone I could go to for advice. I didn't know what to do. What could I do?
Nothing, of course. But then her letter came.
Yes. And I sent her a telegram asking her to come home. I sent it to General Delivery here. That was the only address she gave me. I waited a whole week, but no answer came. Not another word from her. And Mama and Papa's return was drawing nearer and nearer. So I came to San Francisco to get her. I wrote her I was coming. I shouldn't have done that, should I?
Maybe not. It's not always easy to know what to do. You haven't found her.
No, I haven't. I wrote to her that I would go to the St. Mark and begged her to come and let me talk to her, even if she didn't intend to go home with me. But she didn't come. I waited 3 days, and she didn't come. Didn't even send a message of any sort. It was horrible. I couldn't sit there like that, waiting, not knowing what had happened to her, what might be happening to her. The only address I had was General Delivery. I wrote her another letter, and yesterday afternoon, I went to the post office. I stayed there until after dark, but I didn't see her. I went there again this morning, and still didn't see Corinne. But I saw Floyd Thursby. He wouldn't tell me where Corinne was. He wouldn't tell me anything, except that she was well and happy. But how can I believe that? That is what he would tell me anyhow, isn't it?
Sure, but it might be true.
I hope it is. I do hope it is. But I can't go back home like this, without having seen her, without even having talked to her on the phone. He wouldn't take me to her. He said she didn't want to see me. I can't believe that. He promised to tell her he had seen me, and to bring her to see me, if she would come, this evening at the hotel. He said he knew she wouldn't. He promised to come himself if she wouldn't.
Excuse me.
It's all right, Miles. Come in. Miss Wonderly, this is Mr. Archer, my partner.
How do you do?
Miss Wonderly's sister ran away from New York with a fellow named Floyd Thursby. They're here. Miss Wonderly has seen Thursby and has a date with him tonight. Maybe he'll bring the sister with him. Chances are he won't. Miss Wonderly wants us to find the sister and get her away from him and back home. Right?
Yes. The embarrassment that had gradually been driven away by Spade's ingratiating smiles and nods and assurances was pinkening in her face again. She looked at the bag in her lap and picked nervously at it with a gloved finger.
Spade winked at his partner.
Miles Archer's little brown eyes ran their bold, appraising gaze from her lowered face to her feet and up to her face again. Then he looked at Spade and made a silent, whistling mouth of appreciation.
Spade lifted two fingers from the arm of his chair in a brief warning gesture and said, "We shouldn't have any trouble with it. It's simply a matter of having a man at the hotel this evening to shadow him until he leads us to your sister. If she comes with him, and you persuade her to return with you, so much the better. Otherwise, if she doesn't want to leave him after we've found her, well, we'll find a way of managing that."
Yeah.
Oh, but you must be careful. I'm deadly afraid of him, of what he might do. She's so young, and his bringing her here from New York is such a serious... Mightn't he do... something to her?
Just leave that to us. We'll know how to handle him.
But mightn't he?
There's always a chance.
Yeah. But you can trust us to take care of that.
I do trust you. But I want you to know that he's a dangerous man. I honestly don't think he'd stop at anything. I don't believe he'd hesitate to kill Corinne if he thought it would save him. Mightn't he do that?
You didn't threaten him, did you?
I told him that all I wanted was to get her home before Mama and Papa came so they'd never know what she had done. I promised him that I'd never say a word to them about it if he helped me. But if he didn't, Papa would certainly see that he was punished. I don't suppose he believed me altogether.
Can he cover up by marrying her?
He has a wife and 3 children in England.
They usually do, though not always in England. What does he look like?
Oh, he's 35 years old, perhaps. And as tall as you, and either naturally dark or quite sunburned. His hair is dark, too, and he has thick eyebrows. He talks in a rather loud, blustery way, and has a nervous, irritable manner. He gives the impression of being... of violence.
What color eyes?
They're blue-gray and watery, though not in a weak way. And, oh yes, he has a marked cleft in his chin.
Thin, medium, or heavy build?
Quite athletic. He's broad-shouldered and carries himself erect. Has what could be called a decidedly military carriage. He was wearing a light gray suit and a gray hat when I saw him this morning.
What does he do for a living?
I haven't the slightest idea.
What time is he coming to see you?
After 8 o'clock.
All right then, Miss Wonderly. We'll have a man there. It'll help if
Mr. Spade, could either you or Mr. Archer... Could either of you look after it personally? I don't mean that the man you'd send wouldn't be capable, but... Oh, I'm so afraid of what might happen to Corinne. I'm afraid of him. Could you? I'd expect to be charged more, of course. 100? 200? Would that be enough?
Yeah. And I'll look after it myself.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you.
Not at all. Glad to. It'll help some if you either meet Thursby downstairs or let yourself be seen in the lobby with him at some time.
I will. Thank you.
And don't look for me. I'll see you, all right. $200 bills. They're right enough, and they had brothers in her bag.
Don't dynamite her too much. What do you think of her?
Oh, sweet. And you're telling me not to dynamite her? Maybe you saw her first, Sam, but I spoke first.
You'll play hell with her, you will. You got brains. I'll give you that. Hello. Yes. Speaking. Dad. Yes. 15 minutes. Thanks. 2:05. Jesus.
Halfway up an alley, a dark ambulance stood. Behind the ambulance, to the left, the alley was bounded by a waist-high fence, horizontal strips of rough boarding. From the fence, the ground fell away steeply to Stockton Street below. A 10-foot length of the fence's top rail had been torn from a post at one end and hung dangling from the other. 15 feet down the slope, a flat boulder stuck out. In the notch between boulder and slope, Miles Archer lay on his back.
Hey, Sam. I figured you'd want to see this before we took him away.
Thanks, Tom. What happened?
Got him through the pump with this. Webley. It's English, ain't it?
Yes. Webley Fosbury automatic revolver. That's it. 38. 8-shot. They don't make them anymore. How many gone out of it?
1 pill. He must have been dead when he cracked the fence. You ever seen this before?
I've seen Webley Fosbury's. He was shot up here, huh? Standing where you are, with his back to the fence. The man that shot him stands here, lets him have it, and Miles goes back, taking the top off the fence and going on through and down till the rock catches him. That's it?
That's it. The blast burned his coat.
Anybody hear the shot?
For the love of God, Sam, we only just got here. Somebody must have heard it when we find him. You going down to take a look at him before he's moved?
No. You've seen him. You'd catch everything I could.
His gun was tucked away on his hip. Hadn't been fired. His overcoat was buttoned. There's $160 in his wallet. Was he working, Sam? Well?
He was supposed to be tailing a fella named Floyd Thursby.
For what?
He was an Englishman, maybe. I don't know what his game was exactly. We're trying to find out where he lived. Don't crowd me, Tom. I'm going out to break the news to Miles' wife.
It's tough him getting it like that. Miles had his faults, same as the rest of us, but I guess he must have had some good points, too.
I guess so.
Precious. Miles has been shot. Yes, he's dead. Now, don't get excited. Yes. He'll have to break it to Iva. No, I'm damned if I will. You've got to do it. That's a good girl. And keep her away from the office. Tell her I'll see her sometime. Yes, but don't tie me up to anything. That's the stuff. You're an angel. Bye. Christ. Who's that at this hour? Okay. 4:30 in the morning. It can only be... Hello, Tom. Hello, Lieutenant. Come
hey,
in.
Hey, Sam.
Welcome to my bedroom. In a few hours, when I put the bed up, it'll be my living room. Sit down, boys. I was just having a nice quiet talk with my friend, Mr. Bacardi. You know him, of course. No? You don't? Let me introduce you. Mr. B, this is my colleague, Detective Sergeant Pullhouse. This is another colleague, Detective Lieutenant Dundee. They're with the San Francisco Police. Tom, Lieutenant, meet Mr. B. Success to crime.
Did you break the news to Miles' wife, Sam?
Uh-huh.
How'd she take it?
I don't know anything about women.
The hell you don't.
What kind of gun do you carry?
None. I don't like them much. Of course, there are some in the office.
I'd like to see one of them. You don't happen to have one here.
No.
You sure of that?
Look around. Turn the dump upside down if you want. I won't squawk if you got a search warrant.
Oh, hell, Sam, come on.
What do you want, Dundee?
We're not wanting to make any trouble, Sam.
Well, what do you want? Talk turkey. Who in hell do you think you are coming in here trying to rope me in?
All right, sit down and listen.
I'll sit or stand as I damn please.
For God's sake, be reasonable. What's the use of us having a row?
I warned you, your foot was going to slip one of these days.
Everybody's foot slips sometimes.
Who's Thursby?
I told Tom what I knew about him.
You told Tom damn little.
I knew damn little.
Why were you tailing him?
I wasn't. Miles was. For the swell reason that we had a client who was paying good United States money to have him tailed.
Who's the client?
You know, I can't tell you that until I've talked it over with the client.
You'll tell it to me. You'll tell it in court. This is murder, and don't you forget it.
Maybe. And here's something for you to not forget, sweetheart. I'll tell it or not, as I damn well please. It's a long while since I burst out crying because policemen didn't like me.
Be reasonable, Sam. Give us a chance. How can we turn up anything on Miles' killing if you won't give us what you got?
You needn't get a headache over it. I'll bury my dead.
I thought you would. That's just exactly why we came to see you.
What's itching your boyfriend now, Tom?
Just this. Thursby was shot in front of his hotel 35 minutes after you left Burrett Street. Tom says you were in too much of a hurry even to stop for a look at your partner.
Damn it, Sam, you did run off like that.
And you didn't go to Archer's house to tell his wife. We called up and that girl in your office was there and she said you sent her. I give you 10 minutes to get to a phone and do your talking to the girl. I give you 10 minutes to get to Thursby's joint, Geary, near Leavenworth. You could do it easy in that time, or 15 at the most. And that gives you 10 or 15 minutes of waiting before he showed up.
I knew where he lived. And I knew he hadn't gone straight home from killing Miles.
You knew what you knew. What time did you get home?
4:20. I walked around, thinking things over.
We knew you weren't home at 3:30. We tried to get you on the phone. Where'd you do your walking?
Out Bush Street.
Did anybody see you do that, Sam?
No. No witnesses. Sit down, Dundee. You haven't finished your drink. Get your glass, Tom.
No thanks, Sam.
I know where I stand now. I'm sorry I got up on my hind legs, but you birds coming in and trying to put the work on me made me nervous. Having Miles knocked off bothered me. Then you birds cracking Foxy, that's all right now, though. Now that I know what you're up to.
Forget it.
Thursby die?
Yeah.
And you might just as well know it, if you don't. That he died before he could tell anybody anything.
What do you mean by that? You think I did know?
I meant what I said.
You're not ready to pinch me yet, are you, Dundee?
Be reasonable, Sam.
Then there's no particular reason why I should give a damn what you think, is there? I'll be reasonable, Tom. How did I kill Thursby? I've forgotten.
He was shot 4 times in the back with a .44 or .45 from across the street when he started to go into the hotel. Nobody saw it, but that's the way it figures.
He was wearing a Luger in a shoulder holster. It hadn't been fired.
What do the hotel people know about him?
Nothing, except that he's been there a week.
Alone?
Alone.
What'd you find on him or in his room?
What did you think we'd find?
Something to tell you what his story was.
We thought you could tell us that.
I've never seen Thursby, dead or alive.
We've asked what we came to ask. We've told you more than you've told us. That's fair enough. You know me, Spade. If you did or you didn't, you'll get a square deal out of me and most of the breaks. I don't know that I blame you a hell of a lot, but that wouldn't keep me from nailing you.
Fair enough. Then I'd feel better about it if you drink your drink. Good morning, Precious.
She's in there.
I asked you to keep her away.
Yes, but you didn't tell me how. Don't be cranky, Sam. I had her all night.
Sorry, Angel, I haven't,
Oh, Sam.
Hello, Iva.
She was a blonde woman of a few more years than 30. Her facial prettiness was perhaps 5 years past its best moment. Her body, for all its sturdiness, was finely modeled and exquisite. She wore black clothes from hat to shoes. They had, as mourning, an impromptu air.
He took his hand from Effie Perrine's head and entered the inner office.
Iva came quickly to him, raising her sad face for his kiss. Her arms were around him before his held her.
Did you send for Miles' brother?
Yes. He came over this morning. Oh, Sam, did you kill him?
Who put that bright idea in your head?
I thought. Be kind to me, Sam.
You killed my husband, Sam. Be kind to me. Jesus Christ. Now, Iva, don't. Please, 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 Iva. You shouldn't have come here today, Precious. It wasn't wise. You can't stay. You ought to be home.
You come tonight.
Not tonight.
Soon.
Yes.
How soon?
As soon as I can. Goodbye, Iva. Spade took tobacco and cigarette papers from his vest pockets. He did not roll a cigarette. He sat holding the papers in one hand, the tobacco in the other, and looked with brooding eyes at his dead partner's desk.
Effie Perrine came in. Her brown eyes were uneasy. Well?
Spade said nothing. His brooding gaze did not move from his partner's desk.
Well? How did you and the widow make out?
She thinks I shot Miles.
So you can marry her?
Spade made no reply to that.
The girl took his hat from his head and put it on the desk. Then she leaned over and took the tobacco sack and the papers from his inert fingers.
The police think I shot Thursby. Who do you think I shot?
Who's Thursby?
Thursby's the guy Miles was supposed to be tailing for the Wonderly girl.
Her thin fingers finished shaping the cigarette. She licked it, smoothed it, twisted its ends, and placed it between Spade's lips.
Thanks, honey.
Are you going to marry Iva?
Don't be silly.
She doesn't think it's silly. Why should she, the way you've played around with her?
I wish to God I'd never seen her.
Maybe you do now, but there was a time.
I never know what to do or say to a woman except that way. And then I didn't like Miles.
That's a lie, Sam. You know I think she's a louse, but I'd be a louse too if it would give me a body like hers. Do you suppose she could have killed him?
You're an angel. A nice, rattle-brained angel.
Oh, am I? Suppose I told you that your Iva hadn't been home many minutes when I arrived to break the news at 3 o'clock this morning.
Are you telling me?
She kept me waiting at the door while she undressed or finished undressing. I saw her clothes where she dumped them on the chair. Her hat and coat were underneath. Her slip on top was still warm. She said she had been asleep, but she hadn't. She had wrinkled up the bed, but the wrinkles weren't mashed down.
You're a detective, darling, but she didn't kill him.
That louse wants to marry you, Sam. Did you see her last night?
No.
Honestly?
Honestly, don't act like Dundee, sweetheart. It ill becomes you.
Has Dundee been after you?
Uh-huh. He and Tom Polehouse dropped in for a drink at 4 o'clock.
Do they really think you shot this... what's his name?
Thursby.
Do they?
God knows they did have some such notion. I don't know how far I talked him out of it.
Look at me, Sam. You worry me. You always think you know what you're doing, but you're too slick for your own good. And someday you're going to find it out.
That's what Dundee says. But you keep Iva away from me, sweet, and I'll manage to survive the rest of my troubles. Have the Spade and Archer taken off the door and Samuel Spade put on. I'll be back in an hour. Or phone you. Spade went to the St. Mark Hotel. Is Miss Wonderly in her room?
She checked out this morning, sir.
Checked out?
Yes.
Thanks. Spade consulted the house detective, who told him...
She arrived last Tuesday, registered from New York. She didn't have a trunk, only some bags. There was no phone calls charged to her room. She didn't seem to have got much, if any, mail. The only one anybody remembers having seen her with was a tall, dark guy, maybe 36 or so. She went out at 9:30 this morning, came back an hour later, paid a bill, and had her bags carried out to a car. The boy who carried them says it was a Nash touring car, probably a hired one. She left a forwarding address, the Ambassador, Los Angeles.
Your friend Dundee was in. He wanted to look at your guns.
And?
I told him to come back when you were here.
Good girl. If he comes back again, let him look at them.
And Miss Wonderly called up.
It's about time. What'd she say?
She wants to see you. She's at the Coronet on California Street, apartment 1001. You're to ask for Miss LeBlanc.
Miss Wonderly, in a belted green crepe silk dress, opened the door of apartment 1001 at the Coronet. Her face was flushed. Her dark red hair, parted on the left side, swept back in loose waves over her right temple, was somewhat tousled.
Mr. Spade, I have a terrible, terrible confession to make. That story I told you yesterday was all a story.
Oh, that. Now, don't worry. We didn't exactly believe your story.
Then...
We believed your $200.
You mean...
I mean that you paid us more than if you'd been telling the truth, and enough more to make it all right.
And even now, you'd be willing...
That depends. The hell of it is, miss... Is your name Wonderly or LeBlanc?
It's really O'Shaughnessy. Bridget O'Shaughnessy.
The hell of it is, Miss O'Shaughnessy, that a couple of murders coming together like this gets everybody stirred up. Makes the police think they can go to the limit. Makes everybody hard to handle and expensive. It's not. Are you listening?
Mr. Spade, tell me the truth. Am I to blame for last night?
Not unless there are things I don't know about. You warned us that Thursby was dangerous. Of course, you lied to us about your sister and all, but that doesn't count. We didn't believe you. I wouldn't say it was your fault.
Thank you, but I'll always blame myself. Mr. Archer was so alive yesterday, so solid and hearty, and...
Stop it! He knew what he was doing. They're the chances we take.
Was he married?
Yes, with 10,000 insurance, no children, and a wife who didn't like him.
Oh, please don't.
That's the way it was. There's no time for worrying about that now. Out there, a flock of policemen and assistant district attorneys and reporters are running around with their noses to the ground. What do you want to do?
I want you to save me from all of it. Mr. Spade, do they know about me?
Not yet.
What would they think if they knew about the way I came to you? With those lies.
It would make them suspicious. That's why I've been stalling them till I could see you. I thought maybe we wouldn't have to let them know all of it. We ought to be able to fake a story that will rock them to sleep if necessary.
You don't think I had anything to do with the murders, do you?
Oh, I forgot to ask you that. Did you?
No.
That's good. Now what are we going to tell the police?
Must they know about me at all? I think I'd rather die than that, Mr. Spade. I can't explain now, but can't you somehow manage so that you can shield me from them, so I won't have to answer their questions? I don't think I could stand being questioned now. I think I would rather die. Can't you, Mr. Spade?
Maybe. But I'll have to know what it's all about.
I haven't lived a good life. I've been bad. Worse than you could know. But I'm not all bad. Look at me, Mr. Spade. You know I'm not all bad, don't you? You can see that, can't you? Then can't you trust me a little? Oh, I'm so alone and afraid. I've got nobody to help me if you won't help me. I know I've no right to ask you to trust me if I won't trust you. I do trust you, but I can't tell you. I can't tell you now. Later I will, when I can. I'm afraid, Mr. Spade. I'm afraid of trusting you. I don't mean that. I do trust you, but I trusted Floyd and... I'm nobody else. Nobody else, Mr. Spade. You can help me. You said you can help me. If I hadn't believed you could save me, I would have run away today instead of sending for you. I know this isn't fair of me, But be generous, Mr. Spade. Don't ask me to be fair. You're strong. You're resourceful. You're brave. You can spare some of that strength and resourcefulness and courage, surely. Help me, Mr. Spade. Help me, because I need help so badly. And because if you don't, where will I find anyone who can, no matter how willing? Help me. I've no right to ask you to help me blindly, but I do. Be generous, Mr. Spade. You can help me. Help me.
You won't need much of anybody's help. You're good. You're very good. It's chiefly your eyes, I think. And that throb that you get into your voice when you say things like, be generous, Mr. Spade.
I deserve that. I deserve it, but... oh, I did want your help so much. I do want it, and need it so much. And the lie was in the way I said it, and not in all in what I said. It's my own fault that you can't believe me now.
Now you are dangerous.
I suppose you want to leave now. I don't blame you.
What happened last night?
Floyd came to the hotel at 9 o'clock, and we went out for a walk. I suggested that so Mr. Archer could see him. We stopped at a restaurant on Gary Street, I think it was, for supper and to dance, and came back to the hotel at about 12:30. Floyd left me at the door, and I stood inside and watched Mr. Archer follow him down the street on the other side.
Down? You mean toward Market Street?
Yes.
Do you know what they'd be doing in the neighborhood of Bush and Stockton, where Archer was shot?
Isn't that where Floyd lived?
No. Be nearly a dozen blocks out of his way. If he was going from your hotel to his. Well, what did you do after they'd gone?
I went to bed. And this morning when I went out for breakfast, I saw the headlines in the papers and read about, you know. Then I went up to Union Square, where I'd seen automobiles for hire, and got one and went to the hotel for my luggage. After I found my room had been searched yesterday, I knew I would have to move, and I found this place yesterday afternoon. So I came up here and then telephoned your office.
Your room at the St. Mark was searched.
Yes, while I was at your office. I didn't mean to tell you that.
That means I'm not to question you about it?
Yes.
I've got nothing against trusting you blindly, except that I won't be able to do you much good if I haven't some idea of what it's all about. For instance, I've got to have some sort of a line on your Floyd Thursby.
I met him in the Orient. We came here from Hong Kong last week. He had promised to help me. He took advantage of my helplessness and dependence on him to betray me.
Betray you how? Why did you want him shadowed?
I wanted to learn how far he had gone. He wouldn't even let me know where he was staying. I wanted to find out what he was doing, whom he was meeting, things like that.
Did he kill Archer?
Yes, certainly.
He had a Luger in his shoulder holster. Archer wasn't shot with a Luger.
He had a revolver in his overcoat pocket.
You saw it?
Oh, I've seen it often. I know he always carries one there. I didn't see it last night, but I know he never wears an overcoat without it.
Why all the guns?
He lived by them. He always went heavily armed, and he never went to sleep without covering the floor around his bed with crumpled newspapers, so nobody could come silently into his room.
You picked a nice sort of playmate.
Only that sort could have helped me, if he had been loyal.
Yes, if. How bad a hole are you actually in?
As bad as could be.
Physical danger?
I'm not heroic. I don't think there's anything worse than death.
Then it's that, then.
It's that as surely as we're sitting here, unless you help me.
Who do you think I am? I can't work miracles out of thin air. The day's going and you're giving me nothing to work with. Who killed Thursby?
I don't know.
Your enemies are his.
I don't know. His, I hope, but I'm afraid. I don't know.
How was he supposed to be helping you? Why did you bring him here from Hong Kong? This is hopeless. I can't do anything for you. I don't know what you want done. I don't even know if you know what you want.
You won't go to the police.
Go to them? They've been running me ragged since 4 o'clock this morning. I've made myself God knows how much trouble standing them off. For what? For some crazy notion that I could help you. I can't. Go to them? All I've got to do is stand still and they'll be swarming all over me. Well, I'll tell them what I know, and you'll have to take your chances.
You've been patient. You've tried to help me. It is helpless and useless, I suppose. I thank you for what you have done. I'll have to take my chances.
All right, all right, all right. How much money do you got?
I've about $500 left.
Give it to me. There's only 400 here.
I had to keep some to live on.
Can't you get any more?
No.
You must have something you can raise money on.
I've some rings, a little jewelry.
You'll have to hack them. Remedios Best, Mission and Fifth. I'm going out to see what I can do for you. I'll be back as soon as I can with the best news I can manage. I'll ring four times. Long, short, long, short. So you'll know it's me. You needn't go to the door with me. I can let myself out.
Spade's lawyer, a small olive-skinned man with a tired oval face under thin dark hair dotted with dandruff, sat behind an immense desk on which bales of paper were heaped. The small man flourished a cold cigar stub at Spade and said, "So Miles got the big one last night."
"Uh-huh. That's what I came in about. I think I'm going to have to tell a coroner to go to hell, Sid. Can I hide behind the sanctity of my client's secrets and identities and whatnot, all the same as a priest or lawyer?"
"Why not? An inquest is not a court trial. You can try anyway. You've gotten away with more than that before this."
"Yeah, I know, but Dundee's getting snotty. And maybe it is a little bit thick this time. Get your hat, Sid, and we'll go see the right people."
"Oh."
"Listen, I want to be safe."
"You're a son of a gun, Sammy."
"How's your women's intuition today?"
"Why?"
"What do you think of Wonderly?"
"I'm for her."
"She's got too many names. Wonderly, LeBlanc. And she says the right one's a Shaughnessy."
"I don't care if she's got all the names in the phone book. That girl is all right, and you know it."
"I wonder. Anyway, she's given up 700 smacks in 2 days, and that's all right."
"Sam, if that girl's in trouble and you let her down or take advantage of it to bleed her, I'll never forgive you. Never have any respect for you as long as I live."
Effie Perrine rose and went into the outer office. She returned with an engraved card.
"Mr. Joel Cairo."
"This guy is queer."
"In with him then, darling."
Mr. Joel Cairo was a small-boned, dark man of medium height. His hair was black and smooth and very glossy. His features were Levantine, a square-cut ruby, its sides paralleled by four bagged diamonds gleamed against the deep green of his cravat. His black coat, cut tight to narrow shoulders, flared a little over slightly plump hips. The fragrance of Shipra came in with him.
"Sit down, Mr. Cairo."
"I thank you."
"Now, what can I do for you, Mr. Cairo?"
"May a stranger offer condolences for your partner's unfortunate death."
"Thanks."
"May I ask, Mr. Spade, if there was, as the newspapers inferred, a certain relationship between that unfortunate happening and the death a little later of the man Thursby?" "Oh, I beg your pardon. More than idle curiosity made me ask that, Mr. Spade. I am trying to recover an ornament that has been, shall we say, mislaid. I thought and hoped you could assist me."
"I am listening."
"The ornament is a statuette, a black figure of a bird. I am prepared to pay on behalf of the figure's rightful owner the sum of $5,000 for its recovery. I am prepared to promise that, what is the phrase? No questions will be asked."
"$5,000 is a lot of money. It can..."
"Is there anything else?"
"No. Thank you, Effie. Good night. Lock the door when you go, will you?"
"Good night."
"It's an interesting figure."
Cairo smiled and took a short, compact, flat black pistol out of an inner pocket. "You'll please clasp your hands together at the back of your neck."
Spade did not look at the pistol. He raised his arms and, leaning back in his chair, intertwined the fingers of his two hands behind his head. His eyes, holding no particular expression, remained focused on Cairo's dark face.
I intend to search your office, Mr. Spade. I warn you, if you attempt to prevent me, I shall certainly shoot you.
Go ahead.
You will please stand. I shall have to make sure you are not armed.
Spade stood up, pushing the chair back with his calves as he straightened his legs.
Cairo went around behind him.
Spade's elbow dropped as he spun to the right.
Cairo's face jerked back not far enough.
Spade's right heel on the patent leather toes anchored the smaller man in the elbow's path. The elbow struck him beneath the cheekbone. Spade's hand struck down at the pistol.
Cairo let the pistol go the instant Spade's fingers touched it.
The pistol was small in Spade's hand. Spade took his foot off Cairo's to complete his about-face. With his left hand, Spade gathered together the smaller man's coat lapels, a ruby-set green tie bunching out over his knuckles, while his right hand stowed the captured weapon away in a coat pocket.
Cairo's face was twisted by pain and chagrin. There were tears in its dark eyes.
Spade's fist struck Cairo's face.
Cairo shut his eyes and was unconscious.
Spade lowered the limp body into a chair. He emptied the unconscious man's pockets. He examined the spoils with grave, unhurried thoroughness. Let's see what we got here. Wallet. Money. Dollars. Pounds. Silk handkerchief. Sheep rush. All right. Theater ticket. Tonight. Good seat. Chinese coins. Frisco street guide.
Joel, Cairo, awakened slowly. His eyes opened first, but a full minute passed before they fixed their gaze on any definite part of the ceiling. Then he raised his head from the chair back, looked around the office in confusion, saw Spade and sat up. He opened his mouth to speak, started, clipped the hand to his face where Spade's fist had struck and where there was now a florid bruise. I could have shot you, Mr. Spade.
You could have tried.
I did not try.
I know.
Then why did you strike me after I was disarmed?
Sorry, but imagine my embarrassment when I found that $5,000 offer was just hooey.
You are mistaken, Mr. Spade. That was and is a genuine offer.
What the hell?
I am ready to pay $5,000 for the figures of return. But surely it is natural enough that I should first try to spare the owner that expense. If possible.
Who is he?
You will have to forgive my not answering that question.
Will I? I've got you by the neck, Cairo. You've walked in and tied yourself up. Plenty strong enough to suit the police with last night's killings. Well, now you'll have to play with me or else.
I made somewhat extensive inquiries about you before taking any action and was assured that you were far too reasonable to allow other considerations to interfere with profitable business relations.
Where are they?
I have offered
you... There's nothing like $5,000 in your wallet. You're betting your eyes. You could come in and say you'd pay me $1 million for a purple elephant. And what in hell would that mean?
I see. You wish some assurance of my sincerity. A retainer, would that serve?
It might.
You'll take, say, $100?
Better make it 200. You don't mind if I help myself.
Cairo said nothing.
Your first guess was that I had the bird. There's nothing in that. What's your second?
That you know where it is, or, if not exactly that, that you know it is where you can get it.
What sort of proof can you give me that your man is the owner?
Oof. Very little, unfortunately. There is this, though. Nobody else can give you any authentic evidence of ownership at all.
It might be better all around if we put our cards on the table.
I do not think it would be better. If you know more than I shall profit by your knowledge, and so will you, to the extent of $5,000. If you do not, then I have made a mistake in coming to you, and to do as you suggest would be simply to make that mistake worse.
There's your stuff. It's understood that you're to pay my expenses while I'm getting this blackbird for you, and $5,000 when it's done?
Yes, Mr. Spade. That is, $5,000 less whatever monies have been advanced to you. $5,000 in all.
Right. And it's a legitimate proposition. You're not hiring me to do any murders or burglaries for you, but simply to get it back if possible in an honest and lawful way.
If possible, and in any event, with discretion. I am at the Hotel Belvedere when you wish to communicate with me. Room 635. I confidently expect the greatest mutual benefit from our association. Mr. Spade? Oh, may I have my pistol?
Sure, I'd forgotten it. Here.
Thank you. Now, you will please keep your hands on the top of your desk. I intend to search your offices.
I'll be damned. All right, go ahead. I won't stop you.
For half an hour after Joel Cairo had gone, Spade sat alone, still frowning at his desk. Then he said aloud, in the tone of one dismissing a problem, "Well, they're paying for it." And took a bottle of Manhattan cocktail and a paper drinking cup from a desk drawer. He filled the cup two-thirds full, drank, returned the bottle to the drawer, tossed the cup into the wastebasket, put on his hat and overcoat, turned off the lights, and went down to the nightlit street.
An undersized youth of 20 or 21 in a neat gray cap and an overcoat was standing idly on the corner.
Spade walked up Sutter Street to Kearney, where he entered a cigar store to buy two sacks of Bull Durham. When he came out,
the youth was one of four people waiting for a streetcar on the opposite corner.
Spade ate dinner at Herbert's Grill in Powell Street when he left the grill at 7:45.
The youth was looking into a nearby haberdasher's window.
Spade went to the Hotel Belvedere, asking at the desk for Mr. Cairo. He was told that Cairo was not in.
The youth sat in a chair in a far corner of the lobby.
Spade went to the Geary Theater, failed to see Cairo in the lobby, and posted himself on the curb in front, facing the theater.
The youth loitered with other loiterers before Marquardt's restaurant below.
At 8:10, Joel Cairo appeared.
Cairo.
What, you? Oh, yes, of course. You saw the ticket when you went through my pockets.
Uh-huh. I've got something I want to show you. The kid in the cap down by Marquardt's. You see him?
Yes.
Who is he?
I do not know him.
He's been tailing me around town.
Do you think it was wise then to let him see us together?
How do I know? Anyway, it's done. I just wanted to know, because if he gets to be a nuisance, I may have to hurt him.
Do as you think best. He's not a friend of mine.
Do you bring me good news?
We won't have to make anything public that hasn't already been made public.
The police won't have to know about me?
No.
However did you manage it?
Most things in San Francisco can be bought or taken.
And you won't get into trouble? Do sit down.
I don't mind a reasonable amount of trouble. You aren't exactly the sort of person you pretend to be, are you?
I'm not sure. What do you mean?
Schoolgirl manner. Stammering and blushing and all that.
I told you this afternoon that I'd been bad. Worse than you can know.
That's what I mean. You told me that this afternoon in the same words. Same tone. It's a speech you've practiced.
Very well, then, Mr. Spade. I'm not at all the sort of person I pretend to be. I'm 80 years old, incredibly wicked, and an iron molder by trade. But if it's a pose, it's one I've grown into. So you won't expect me to drop it entirely, will you?
Oh, it's all right. Only it wouldn't be all right if you were actually that innocent. We'd never get anywhere.
I won't be innocent.
I saw Joel Cairo tonight.
You know him?
I saw him tonight. He was going to the theater.
You mean you talked to him?
Only for a minute or two, till the curtain bell rang.
She got up from the settee and went to the fireplace to poke the fire. She changed slightly the position of an ornament on the mantelpiece, crossed the room to get a box of cigarettes from a table in a corner, straightened the curtain, and returned to her seat. Her face now was smooth and unworried.
You're good. You're very good.
What did he say?
About what?
About me.
Nothing.
Well, what did he say?
He offered me $5,000 for the Black Bird. You're not going to go around poking at the fire and straightening up the room again, are you?
I won't. And what did you say?
$5,000 is a lot of money.
Surely you're not really considering it.
Why not? $5,000 is a lot of money.
But, Mr. Spade, you promised to help me. I trusted you. You can't.
Don't let's try to figure out how much you've trusted me. I promised to help you, sure. but you didn't say anything about any blackbirds.
But you must have known, or you wouldn't have mentioned it to me. You do know now. You won't... You can't treat me like this.
$5,000 is a lot of money.
It is. It's far more than I could ever offer you, if I must bid for your loyalty.
That's good, coming from you. What have you given me besides money? You given me any of your confidence? Any of your truth? Any help in helping you? Haven't you tried to buy my loyalty with money and nothing else? Well, if I'm peddling it, why shouldn't I let it go to the highest bidder?
I've given you all the money I have. I've thrown myself on your mercy, told you that without your help I'm utterly lost. What else is there? Can I buy you with my body?
Spade took her face between his hands, and he kissed her mouth, roughly and contemptuously. Then he sat back and said, I'll think it over. Hell, there's no sense to this. I don't give a damn about your honesty. I don't care what kind of tricks you're up to or what your secrets are. But I've got to have something to show that you know what you're doing.
I do know. Please believe that I do. And then it's all for the best, and...
Well, show me then. I'm willing to help you. I've done what I could so far. If necessary, I'll go ahead blindfolded. But I can't do it without more confidence in you than I've got now. You've got to convince me that you know what it's all about. That you're not simply fiddling around by guess and by God, hoping it'll come out all right somehow in the end.
Can't you trust me just a little longer?
How much is a little? What are you waiting for?
I must talk to Joel Cairo.
You can see him tonight. His show will be out soon. We can get him on the phone at his hotel.
But he can't come here. I can't let him know where I am. I'm afraid.
My place.
Do you think he'd go there?
Sure.
All right. Shall we go now?
Their taxi cab drew up behind a dark sedan that stood directly in front of Spade's street door.
Iva Archer was alone in the sedan, sitting at the wheel.
Do you mind waiting in the lobby a moment? I won't be long.
That's perfectly all right.
In front of a garage, on the next corner, an undersized youth of 20 or 21, in a neat gray cap and overcoat, loafed with his back against the wall.
I gotta talk to you, Sam. Can't I come in?
Not now.
Who is she?
I've only a minute, Iva. What is it? Has anything happened? You oughtn't to be here at this time of night.
I'm beginning to believe that. You told me I oughtn't to come to the office, and now I oughtn't to come here. Do you mean I oughtn't to chase after you? If that's what you mean, why don't you say it right out?
Now, Iva, you got no right to take that attitude.
I know I haven't. I haven't any rights at all, it seems, where you're concerned. I thought I did. I thought your pretending to love me gave me some...
This is no time to be arguing about that, Precious. What was it you wanted to see me about?
I can't talk to you here, Sam. Can't I come in?
Not now.
Why can't I? All right!
Good night, Iva. Hello, Mr. Cairo. Miss Spade here. Can you come up to my place? Post Street. Now. Yes, I think it is. Miss O'Shaughnessy is here. Wants to see you. Right. He'll be up in a few minutes.
I don't have to tell you how utterly at a disadvantage you'll have me with him here, if you choose.
No, you don't have to tell me.
And you know I'd never have placed myself in this position if I hadn't trusted you completely.
That again.
But you know it's so.
No, I don't know it. My asking for reasons why I should trust you brought us here. Don't let's confuse things. You don't have to trust me anyhow, as long as you can persuade me to trust you.
She studied his face. Her nostrils quivered.
Don't worry about that now. He'll be here in a minute. Get your business with him over. Then we'll see how we'll stand.
And you'll let me go about it. With him. In my own way.
Sure.
You're a godsend.
Don't overdo it.
She looked reproachfully at him, though smiling, and returned to the padded rocker.
Joel Cairo was excited. His dark eyes seemed all irises, and his high-pitched, thin-voiced words were tumbling out before Spade had the door half open. That boy is out there watching the house, Mr. Spade. That boy you showed me, or to whom you showed me in front of the theater. What am I to understand from that, Mr. Spade? I came here in good faith with no thought of tricks or traps.
You were asked in good faith.
but I should have guessed he might show up. He saw you come in?
Naturally. I could have gone on, but that seemed useless since you had already let him see us together.
What boy?
If you do not know, ask Mr. Spade. I know nothing about it except through him.
A kid who's been trying to tail me around all evening.
Did he follow you to my apartment?
No, I shook him before that. Then I suppose he came back here to try to pick me up again.
I am delighted to see you again, Miss O'Shaughnessy.
I was sure you would be. Sam told me about your offer for the Falcon. How soon can you have the money ready?
It is ready.
In cash?
Oh, yes.
You're ready to give us $5,000 now, if we give you the Falcon?
Oh, excuse me. I expressed myself badly. I did not mean to say that I had the money in my pockets, but that I am prepared to get it on a very few minutes' notice at any time during banking hours.
Oh.
That's probably right. He had only a few hundred in his pockets when I frisked him this afternoon.
I can be quite prepared to give you the money at, say, 10:30 in the morning.
But I haven't got the Falcon. I'll have it in a week at the most, though.
Where is it?
Where Floyd hid it.
Floyd? Thursby?
Yes.
And you know where that is?
I think I do.
Then why must we wait a week?
Perhaps not a whole week. Whom are you buying it for, Joe?
I told Mr. Spade, for its owner.
So you went back to him?
Naturally I did.
I should have liked to have seen that.
That was the logical development. Why, if I in turn may ask a question, are you willing to sell it to me?
I'm afraid. After what happened to Floyd. That's why I don't have it now. I'm afraid to touch it, except to turn it over to somebody else right away.
Exactly what happened to Floyd?
G.
I see. Is G here?
I don't know. What difference does that make?
It might make a world of difference. A detective.
Or me. Or you.
Exactly. Shall we add more certainly the boy outside?
Yes. Yes, unless he's the one you had in Constantinople.
The one you couldn't make? Oh! You!
Hey, enough of that.
Oh! This is the second time you put your hands on me!
Yes, and when you're slapped, you'll take it and like it.
Who is it?
I don't know. I'm shutting the door to the corridor. The both of you keep quiet.
Hey, Sam. We thought maybe you wouldn't have gone to bed yet.
You guys pick swell hours to do your visiting in. What is it this time?
We want to talk to you, Spade.
Well, go ahead and talk.
Yeah, we don't have to do it standing here, do we?
You're not coming in. What do you want to do about it? Try to get in? Or do your talking here, or go to hell.
It'd pay you to play along with us a little, Spade. You got away with this, and you got away with that. But you can't keep it up forever.
Stop me when you can.
That's what I'll do. There's talk going around that you and Archer's wife were cheating on him.
That sounds like something you thought up yourself.
Then there's not anything to it.
Not anything.
The talk is that she tried to get a divorce out of him so she could put in with you, but he wouldn't give it to her. Anything to that?
No.
There's even talk that that's why he was put on the spot.
Don't be a hog. You oughtn't try to pin more than one murder at a time on me. Your first idea that I knocked Thursby off because he'd killed Miles falls apart if you blame me for killing Miles, too.
You haven't heard me say you killed anybody. You're the one that keeps bringing that up. But suppose I did. You could have blipped them both. There's a way of figuring it.
Uh-huh. I could have butchered Miles to get his wife, and then Thursby so I could hang Miles killing on him. That's a hell of a swell system, or will be, when I can give somebody else the bump or hang Thursby's on them. How long am I supposed to keep that up? You gonna put your hand on my shoulder for all the killings in San Francisco from now on?
Oh, Sam, come on, cut the comedy, all right? You know damn well we don't like this any more than you do, but we got our work to do.
I hope you've got something to do besides pop in here early every morning with a lot of damn fool questions.
I get damn lying answers.
Take it easy.
If you say there is nothing between you and Archer's wife, you're a liar, and I'm telling you so.
Is that the hot tip that brought you here at this ungodly time of night?
That's one of them.
And the others?
Let us in.
Uh-uh.
There must have been something to it, Tom.
God knows.
What is it, charades?
All right, Spade, we're going. We'll be in to see you now and then. Maybe you're right in bucking us. Think it over.
Uh-huh. Glad to see you any time, Lieutenant. And when I'm not busy, I'll let you in.
Help! Help! Please help!
I guess we're going in.
I guess you are.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy was huddled in the armchair by the table. Her forearms were up over her cheeks, her knees drawn up until they hid the lower part of her face. Her eyes were white-circled and terrified.
Joel Cairo stood in front of her, bending over her, holding in one hand the pistol Spade had twisted out of his hand. His other hand was clapped to his forehead. Blood ran through the fingers of that hand, down under them, to his eyes.
What are you up to here?
Look at my head! This is what she has done!
Did you do that?
I had to. I was all alone in here with him when he attacked me. I couldn't... I tried to keep him off. I couldn't make myself shoot him.
Aye. Oh, you liar. You dirty, filthy liar. She's lying awfully. I came here in good faith and was attacked by both of them. And when you came, he went out to talk to you, leaving her in here with the pistol. And then she said they were going to kill me after you left. And I called for help so you would leave here to be murdered. And then she struck me with a pistol.
Here, give me the pistol. Let's get this straight. What did you come here for?
He sent for me. He called me on the phone and asked me to come here.
What did he want you for?
He said he wanted... They wanted to see me. I don't know what about.
What's that god-awful sweet smell?
Well, what happened then?
Well, they attacked me. She struck me first, and then he choked me and took the pistol out of my pocket. I don't know what they would have done if you hadn't arrived at that moment. I dare say they would have murdered me then and there. When he went out to answer the bell, he left her here with the pistol to watch over me.
Why don't you make him tell the truth? Ow!
None of that now.
She's impulsive.
What do you want us to think the truth is?
Not what he said. Not anything he said, is it?
How do I know? I was out in the kitchen mixing an omelet when it all happened, wasn't I?
If he's not telling the truth, how come he did the squawking for help and not you?
Oh, he was frightened to death when I struck him.
Oof, oof, another lie! Ow!
Behave, sister. That's no way to act.
Then make him tell the truth.
We'll do that. Just don't get rough.
Well, Tom, I don't guess we'll go wrong pulling the lot of them in.
Don't be in a hurry. Everything can be explained.
I bet.
Miss O'Shaughnessy, I present Lieutenant Dundee and Detective Sergeant Polhouse. Miss O'Shaughnessy is an operative in my employ.
Oh, that is insulting!
I hired her just recently. Yesterday, in fact. This is Mr. Joel Cairo, a friend, an acquaintance at any rate, of Thursby's. He came to me this afternoon and tried to hire me.
Hire you to do what?
To find something Thursby was supposed to have on him when he was bumped off. It looked funny, the way he put it to me, so I wouldn't touch it. Then he pulled the gun. Well, never mind that unless it comes to a point of laying charges against each other. Anyway, after talking it over with Miss O'Shaughnessy, I thought maybe I could get something out of him about Miles and Thursby's killing. So I asked him to come up here. Maybe we put the questions to him a little rough, but he wasn't hurt any. Not enough to have to cry for help. I'd already had to take his gun away from him again.
Well, mister, what have you got to say to that?
I don't know what I should say.
Try telling the facts.
The facts? What assurance have I the facts will be believed?
Quit stalling. All you've got to do is swear to a complaint that they took a poke at you, and the warrant clerk will believe you enough to issue a warrant that'll let us throw them in the can.
Go ahead, Cairo. Make him happy. Tell him you'll do it. Then we'll swear to one against you, and he'll have the lot of us.
Get your hats.
Well, boys and girls, we put it over nicely.
Get your hats!
Don't you know when you're being kidded?
No, but we'll let that wait till we get down to the hall.
I dare you to take us in, Dundee. We'll laugh at you in every newspaper in San Francisco. You don't think any of us is going to swear to any complaints against the others, do you? Wake up. You've been kidded. When the bell rang, I said Miss O'Shaughnessy in Cairo. It's those damn bulls again. They're getting to be nuisances. Let's play a joke on them. When you hear them going, one of you scream. Then we'll see how far we can string them along before they tumble.
Cut it out, Sam.
But that's the way it was, we...
And the cuts on his head and mouth, where'd they come from?
Ask him. Maybe he cut himself shaving.
I fell. We intended to be struggling for the pistol when you came in, but I fell. I tripped on the end of the rug and fell while we were pretending to struggle.
Horse feathers.
That's all right, Dundee. Believe it or not. The point is that that's our story and we'll stick to it. The newspapers will print it whether they believe it or not. And it'll be just as funny one way as the other. Or more so. It's no crime to kid a copper, is it? You haven't got anything on anybody here. Everything we told you was part of the joke. What are you going to do about it?
You can't get away with that. You belched for help, and you got to take it.
Oh, no, sir. It was a joke. He said you were friends of his and would understand.
I'll take you along for packing the gun anyway. And I'll take the rest of you along to see who laughs at the joke.
Don't be a sap, Dundee. The gun was part of the plant. It's one of mine. Too bad it's only a .32. Or maybe you could find it was the one Thursby and Miles were shot with. Maybe. Get him out of here quick.
Get their names and addresses.
Joel Cairo, Hotel Belvedere.
You can always get in touch with Miss O'Shaughnessy through me.
Get her address.
Her address is in care of my office.
All right, lady. Where do you live?
Get him out of here, Tom. I had enough of this.
Take it easy, Sam, okay? Lieutenant, is that all?
I'm going to...
What's the hurry?
It was all in fun, but just the same, you're afraid to be left here with him.
Oh, not at all, but it's quite late, and I'm going. I'll go out with you if you don't mind.
Tell him to leave the gun.
Let's go. I hope to God you know what you're doing, Sam.
Childish, huh? I know, but by God, I do hate being hit without hitting back. Not that it was so much of a sock at that. Cheap enough price to pay for winning. Though I'll remember it.
You're absolutely the wildest person I've ever known. Do you always carry on so high-handed?
I let him hit me, didn't I?
Oh, yes. But a police official.
It wasn't that. It was that, losing his head and slugging me, he overplayed his hand. If I'd mixed it with him, then he couldn't have backed down. We've had to go through with it, and then we'd had to tell that goofy story at headquarters. What did you do to Cairo?
Nothing. I tried to frighten him into keeping still until they had gone. And either he got too frightened or stubborn and yelled.
And then you smacked him with the gun.
I had to. He attacked me.
You don't know what you're doing. It's just what I told you. You're fumbling along by guess and by God.
I'm sorry.
Sure you are. Now you've had your talk with Cairo, now you can talk to me.
No. Oh, yes. Of course.
Well?
Well, but I didn't. We were interrupted almost before we had begun.
You want me to phone him and ask him to come back? Well, I'm listening.
You're altogether unpredictable.
I'm still listening.
Look at the time.
Uh-huh. It's been a busy evening.
I must go.
Not until you've told me about it.
But look at the time. It would take hours to tell you.
Then it'll have to take them, won't it?
You're the most insistent person.
Yes, and wild and unpredictable. What's this bird, this falcon, that everybody's all steamed up about?
Suppose I wouldn't tell you. Suppose I wouldn't tell you anything at all about it. What would you do?
You mean about the bird?
I mean about the whole thing.
I wouldn't be too surprised to know what to do next.
And that would be? Something wild and unpredictable?
Maybe. But I don't see what you've got to gain by covering up now. It's coming out bit by bit anyhow. There's a lot of it I don't know, but there's some of it I do, and some more that I can guess at. And give me another day like this. I'll soon be knowing things about you that you don't even know.
I suppose you do now, but... Oh, I'm so tired of it, and I do so hate having to talk about it. Wouldn't it be just as well to wait and let you learn about it, as you say you will?
I don't know. You'll have to figure that out for yourself. My way of learning is to heave a wild and unpredictable monkey wrench into the machinery. It's all right with me, if you're sure none of the flying pieces will hurt you.
I'm afraid of you, and that's the truth.
That's not the truth.
It is. I know two men I'm afraid of, and I've seen them both tonight.
I can understand you're being afraid of Cairo. He's out of your reach.
Then you aren't?
Not that way.
It's a black figure, as you know. Smooth and shiny. Of a bird, a hawk or falcon. About a foot tall.
What makes it so important?
I don't know. They'd never tell me. They promised me £500 if I helped them get it. Then Floyd said afterwards, after we left Joe, that he'd give me $750.
So it must be worth more than $7,500?
Oh, much more than that. They didn't pretend that they were sharing equally with me. They were simply hiring me to help them.
To help them how?
To help them get it from the man who had it, a Russian named Kemedov.
How?
Oh, but it's not important, and that wouldn't help you. And it's certainly none of your business.
This was in Constantinople?
Marmara.
Go ahead. What happened then?
But that's all I've told you. They promised me £500 to help them, and I did. And then we found that Joe Cairo meant to desert us.
taking the Falcon with him and leaving us nothing. So he did exactly that to him first. But then I wasn't any better off than I had been before, because Floyd hadn't any intention at all of paying me the £750 he had promised me. I learned that by the time we got here. He said we would go to New York, where he would sell it and give me my share, but I could see that he wasn't telling the truth. And that's why I came to see you, to get you to help me learn where the Falcon was.
And suppose you'd got it. What then?
Then I'd be in a position to talk terms with Mr. Floyd Thursby.
But you wouldn't have known where to take it to get more money than he'd give you. The larger sum that you knew he expected to sell it for.
I did not know.
What makes it worth all that money? You must have some idea. At least be able to guess.
I haven't the slightest idea.
What's it made of?
Porcelain or black stone. I don't know. I've never touched it. I've only seen it once, for a few minutes. Floyd showed it to me when we first got a hold of it.
You're a liar.
I am a liar. I've always been a liar.
Don't brag about it. It's childish. Was there any truth in all of that yarn?
Some.
How much?
Not very much.
We've got all night before us. I'll put some brandy and some coffee and we'll try again.
Oh, I'm so tired. I'm so tired of it all. Of myself, of lying and thinking up lies, of not knowing what is a lie and what is a truth. I wish I...
She put her hands up to Spade's cheeks, but her open mouth hard against his mouth, her body flat against his body.
Spade's arms went around her, holding her to him, muscles bulging his blue sleeves, a hand cradling her head, its fingers half lost among red hair.
Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon, Act Two.
Beginning day had reduced night to a thin smokiness when Spade sat up.
At his side, Bridget O'Shaughnessy's soft breathing had the regularity of utter sleep.
Spade was quiet, leaving bed and bedroom and shutting the bedroom door. He dressed in the bathroom. Then he examined the sleeping girl's clothes, took a flat brass key from the pocket of her coat and went out. He went to the Coronet, letting himself into the building and into her apartment with the key. He searched the place from wall to wall.
Who is that?
Young Spade, bearing breakfast.
Oh, you frightened me.
I wanted to see if that kid was still on the job and to get some stuff for breakfast.
Is he?
No.
I awakened and you weren't here, and then I heard someone coming in. I was terrified.
I'm sorry, Angel. I thought you'd sleep through it. Did you have that gun underneath your pillow all night?
No. You know I didn't. I jumped up and got it when I was frightened.
Why don't you get cleaned up and dressed while I make breakfast? Then we'll sit down and talk about the bird.
You can't ask me to talk about that this morning of all mornings. I don't want to, and I won't.
It's a stubborn damn hussy.
Hotel Coronet.
I'll go in with you.
No, it's bad enough to be coming home in evening dress at this hour without bringing company. I hope I don't meet anybody.
Dinner tonight?
Yes.
Where to now, buddy?
Hotel Belvedere. At the Hotel Belvedere, Spade learned that Cairo was not in. He saw
the youth who had shadowed him sitting in the lobby on a divan from which the elevators could be seen. He was reading a newspaper.
Where is he?
What?
Where is he?
Who?
The ferry.
What do you think you're doing, Jack? Kidding me?
I'll tell you when I am.
Shove off!
You'll have to talk to me before you're through, Sonny. Some of you will. And you can tell G I said so.
Keep asking for it, and you're gonna get it. Plenty. I told you to shove off. Shove off.
That would go over big back on 7th Avenue. But you're not in Romeville now. You're in my burg. Well, where is he?
The boy spoke two words. The first, a short guttural verb. The second, you.
People lose teeth talking like that. If you want to hang around, you'll be polite.
The boy repeated his two words.
Hey, Luke. Hey, Luke, come here.
Hello, Sam.
Hello, Luke.
Say, that's too bad about Miles.
Bad break. Say, you're the house dick here. Why do you let these cheap gunmen hang around in the lobby with their tools bulging their clothes?
Yeah? What do you want here, kid? Well, if you don't want anything, beat it and don't come back.
I won't forget you guys.
What is it?
Damned if I know. I just happened to spot him. You know anything about this Joel Cairo, 635?
That one.
How long has he been here?
4 days. This is the fifth.
What about him?
Search me, Sam. I got nothing against him but his looks.
Did he come in last night?
No. What is it?
Nothing, Luke.
Come clean. You know I'll keep my clam shut, but if there's anything wrong, we ought to know about it so as we can collect our bill.
Nothing like that. As a matter of fact, I'm doing a little work for him. I'd tell you if he was wrong.
You'd better. Want me to kind of keep an eye on him?
Thanks, Luke. It wouldn't hurt. You can't know too much about the man you're working for these days.
It was 21 minutes past 11 by the clock over the elevator doors when Joel Cairo came in from the street. His forehead was bandaged. His clothes had the limp unfreshness of too many hours' consecutive wear. His face was pasty with sagging mouth and eyelids.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's go someplace where we can talk.
Please excuse me. Our conversations in private have not been such that I am anxious to continue them. Pardon my speaking bluntly, but it is the truth.
You mean last night? What the hell else could I do? I thought you'd see that. If you pick a fight with her or let her pick one with you, I've got to throw in with her. I don't know where that damn bird is. You don't. She does. How in hell are we going to get it if I don't play along with her?
You have always, I must say, a smooth explanation ready.
What do you want me to do, learn to stutter? Dundee take you down to the hall?
Yes.
How long did they work on you?
Until a very little while ago, and very much against my will. I shall certainly take the matter up with the Consul General of Greece and with an attorney.
Go ahead. See what it gets you. What'd you let the police shake out of you?
Not a single thing. I adhere to the course you indicated earlier in your rooms, though I certainly wish you had devised a more reasonable story. I felt decidedly ridiculous repeating it.
Sure, but his goofiness is what makes it good. You sure you didn't give him anything?
You may rely on it, Mr. Spade, that I did not.
You'll be hearing from Dundee again. Stay dummied up on him and you'll be all right. Don't worry about the story's goofiness. A sensible one would have us all in the cooler. You'll want to sleep if you've been standing up under a police storm all night, so I'll see you later.
No, not yet. Iva. Yes, I'll have him call you as soon as he comes in. That's the third time she's called up this morning. Your Miss O'Shaughnessy's in there. She's been waiting since a few minutes after 9.
What else?
And G called up.
Who?
G. Initial G. That's what he said. When I told him you weren't in, he said, when he comes in, will you please tell him that G, who got his message, phoned and will phone again?
Thanks, darling.
Somebody has been in my apartment. It's all upside down, every which way.
Anything taken?
I don't think so. I don't know. I was afraid to stay. I changed as fast as I could and came down here. Oh, you must have let that boy follow you there.
No, Angel.
But he found it, or somebody did.
Sure. I wonder if it could have been Cairo. He wasn't at his hotel all night. Didn't get in until a few minutes ago. He told me he'd been standing up under a police grilling all night. I wonder.
You went to see Joe this morning?
Yes.
Why?
Why?
Because my own true love, I've got to keep in some sort of touch with all the loose ends of this dizzy affair if I'm ever going to make heads or tails of it. Now we've got to find a new home for you, haven't we?
I won't go back there.
I think I've got it. Precious.
Yes?
Does your woman's intuition still tell you that she's a Madonna or something?
I still believe that no matter what kind of trouble she's gotten into, she's all right, if that's what you mean.
That's what I mean. Could you put her up for a few days?
You mean at home?
Yes, her joint's been broken into. That's the second burglary she's had this week. It'd be better for her if she wasn't alone. It would help a lot if you could take her in.
Is she really in danger, Sam?
I think she is.
That would scare Ma into a green hemorrhage. I'll have to tell her she's a surprise witness or something, that you're keeping her undercover till the last minute.
You're a darling. You better take her out there now. Let's see, you oughtn't to be seen leaving here together. You go home, take a taxi. Make sure you aren't followed. You probably won't be, but make sure. I'll send her out in another one in a little while, making sure she isn't followed. The telephone bell was ringing when Spade returned to his office after sending Bridget O'Shaughnessy off to Effie Perrine's house. Hello. Yes, this is Spade. Yes, I got it. I've been waiting to hear from you. Who? Mr. Gutman. Oh, yes, sure. Now, the sooner the better. 12C. Right. Say, 15 minutes. Right.
Sam.
Hello, honey.
Oh, Sam, forgive me. Forgive me.
Sure. That's all right. Forget it.
But, Sam, I sent those policemen there. I was mad, crazy with jealousy. And I phoned them that if they'd go there, they'd learn something about Miles' murder.
What made you think that?
Oh, I didn't. But I was mad, Sam. And I wanted to hurt you.
Well, it made things damn awkward. But it's all right now. Only don't get any more crazy notions like that.
I won't, ever. But you were nice to me last night. You were cold and distant and wanted to get rid of me. When I had come down there and waited so long to warn you and you...
Warn me about what?
About Phil. He's found out about. About your being in love with me. And Miles had told him about my wanting a divorce, though of course he never knew what for. And now Phil thinks we... You killed his brother because he wouldn't give me the divorce so we could get married. He told me he believed that. And yesterday he went and told the police.
Ain't that sweet. And you came here to warn me. And because I was busy, you got up on your ear and helped this damn Phil Archer stir things up.
I'm sorry. I know you won't forgive me. I'm sorry.
Sorry. You ought to be. On your own account, as well as mine. Has Dundee been to see you since Phil did his talking, or anybody from the Bureau?
No.
They will. It'd be just as well not to let them find you here. Did you tell them who you were when you phoned?
Oh, no, I simply told them that if they'd go to your apartment right away, they'd learn something about the murder and hung up.
Where'd you phone from?
The drugstore up above your place. Oh, Sam, dearest,
It was a dumb trick, all right, but it's done now. You better run along home and think up things to tell the police. You'll be hearing from them. Maybe it'd be best to say no right across the board, or maybe you better see Sid Wise first.
Your lawyer?
Yeah, you could tell Sid everything, or almost everything. Where were you the night Miles was shot?
Oh, I was.
No. But if that's your story, it's all right with me. Go see Sid. It's up on the next corner, the pinkish building, room 827.
What makes you think I wasn't home?
Nothing, except that I know you weren't.
Effie Perrine told you that. Well, I saw her looking at my clothes and snooping around. You know she doesn't like me, Sam. Why do you believe things she tells you when you know she'd do anything to make trouble for me?
Jesus, you women. You'll have to trot along, Precious. I'm late for an appointment now. You do what you want, but if I were you, I'd tell Sid the truth or nothing. I mean, leave out the parts you don't want to tell him, but don't make up anything to take its place.
I'm not lying to you, Sam.
Like hell you're not.
You don't believe me?
I don't believe you.
And you won't forgive me for...
Sure I do. It's all right. Now run along.
Won't you go with me to see Mr. Wise?
I can't, and I'd only be in the way. Now beat it.
The mahogany door of Suite 12C at the Alexandria Hotel was opened by the boy Spade had talked to in the Belvedere lobby.
Hello.
The boy did not say anything. He stood aside, holding the door open.
Spade went in.
A fat man came to meet him. The fat man was flabbily fat, with bulbous pink cheeks and lips and chins and neck, with a great soft egg of a belly that was all his torso, and pendant cones for arms and legs. Ah, Mr. Spade.
How do you do, Mr. Gutman?
Holding Spade's hand, the fat man turned beside him, put his other hand to Spade's elbow, and guided him across a green rug to a green plush chair beside a table that held a siphon, some glasses, and a bottle of Johnny Walker whiskey on a tray, a box of cigars, Coronas del Ritz, two newspapers, and a small and plain yellow soapstone box.
Spade sat in the green chair.
We begin well, sir. I distrust a man that says when. If he's got to be careful not to drink too much, it's because he's not to be trusted when he does.
Spade took the glass and, smiling, made the beginning of a bow over it.
Well, sir, here's to plain speaking and clear understanding. You're a close-mouth man?
I like to talk.
Better and better. I distrust a close-mouth man. He generally picks the wrong time to talk and says the wrong things. Talking something you can't do judiciously unless you keep in practice. We'll get along, sir, that we will. A cigar, sir?
Sure.
Now, sir, we'll talk if you like. And I'll tell you right out that I'm a man who likes talking to a man who likes to talk.
Swell. Will we talk about the Blackbird?
Will we? We will. You're the man for me, sir. A man along my own lines. No beating about the bush, but right to the point. Will we talk about the Blackbird? We will. I like that, sir. I like that way of doing business. Let us talk about the Blackbird, by all means. But first, sir, answer me a question, please. Though maybe it's an unnecessary one, so we'll understand each other from the beginning. You're here as Miss O'Shaughnessy's representative?
I can't say yes or no. There's nothing certain about it either way yet. It depends.
It depends on?
If I knew what it depends on, I could say yes or no.
Maybe it depends on Joel Cairo.
Maybe.
You could say then that the question is which one of them you'll represent?
You could put it that way.
It would be one or the other?
I didn't say that.
Who else is there?
There's me.
Oh, that's wonderful, sir. That's wonderful. I do like a man that tells you right out he's looking out for himself. Don't we all? I don't trust a man that says he's not. And a man that's telling the truth when he says he's not, I distrust most of all because he's an ass. And an ass that's going contrary to the laws of nature.
Uh-huh. Now let's talk about the Blackbird.
Let's. Mr. Spade, have you any conception of how much money can be made out of that Blackbird?
No.
Well, sir, if I told you, by gad, if I told you half, you'd call me a liar.
No, not even if I thought it. But if you won't take the risk, just tell me what it is, and I'll figure out the profits.
You couldn't do it, sir. Nobody could do it that hadn't had a world of experience with things of that sort, and there aren't any other things of that sort. You mean you don't know what it is?
Ah, hell, I know what it's supposed to look like. I know the value in life you people put on it. I don't know what it is.
She didn't tell you?
Miss O'Shaughnessy?
Yes, a lovely girl, sir.
Uh-huh, no.
She must know. And Cairo didn't either.
Cairo is cagey. He's willing to buy it, but he won't risk telling me anything I don't know already.
How much is he willing to buy it for?
$10,000.
$10,000, mind you, not even pounds. That's the Greek for you. What did you say to that?
I said if I turned it over to him, I'd expect the $10,000.
Ah, yes, if. Nicely put, sir. They must know. Do they? Do they know what the bird is, sir? What was your impression?
I can't help you there. There's not much to go by. Cairo didn't say he did, and he didn't say he didn't. She said she didn't, but I took it for granted that she was lying.
That was not an injudicious thing to do. Maybe they don't. If they don't, I'm the only one in the whole wide, sweet world who does.
I'm glad I came to the right place.
By gad, sir, your glass is empty. Ah, sir, this kind of medicine will never hurt you here.
Here's to plain speaking and clear understanding.
Well, sir, it's surprising, but it well may be a fact that neither of them does know exactly what the bird is. and that nobody in all this whole wide, sweet world knows what it is, saving and accepting only your humble servant, Caspar Gutman, Esquire.
Swell. When you've told me, there'll only be two of us who know.
Mathematically correct, sir. But I don't know for certain that I'm going to tell you.
Don't be a damn fool. You know what it is. I know where it is. That's why we're here.
Well, sir, where is it? You see, I must tell you what I know, but you will not tell me what you know. That is hardly equitable, sir. No, no. I do not think we can do business along those lines.
Think again and think fast. I told that punk of yours that you'd have to talk to me before you got through. I'll tell you now that you'll do your talking today or it's over. What are you wasting my time for? You and your lousy secret. Christ. I know exactly what that stuff is that they keep in the subterranean vaults. But what good does it do me? I can get along without you. God damn you! Maybe you could have got along without me if you'd kept clear of me. You can't now. Not in San Francisco. You'll come in, or you'll get out. And you'll do it today. And another thing. I don't want...
The boy who admitted Spade came in.
Another thing. Keep that gunsel away from me while you're making up your mind. I don't like him. He makes me nervous. I'll kill him the first time he gets in my way. I'll kill him.
The boy's lips twitched in a shadowy smile. He neither raised his eyes nor spoke.
Well, sir, I must say, you have a most violent temper.
Temper? Think it over and think like hell. You've got till 5:30 to do it. Then you're either in or out, for keeps. 5:30, then the curtain.
The boy, staring at Spade's chest, repeated the two words he had twice spoken in the Belvedere lobby. His voice was not loud. It was bitter.
So tell me, Sid, Miss Archer come to see you?
Yeah. Gonna marry the lady, Sammy.
Ah, Christ, now you start that.
If you don't, you're gonna have a job on your hands.
You mean you are?
Oh, hell, Sammy.
Well, that's what lawyers are for, right? What'd she tell you?
What about you?
About anything I ought to know.
She told me she had tried to get a divorce from Miles so she could...
I know all that. You can skip it. Get to the part I don't know.
Well, how do I know how much she told you? I don't know anything.
Quit stalling, Sid. What'd she tell you she wanted kept from me?
Now, Sammy, that's not...
Dear God, he's my own lawyer and he's got rich off me and I have to get down on my knees and beg him to tell me things. What the hell do you think I sent her to you for?
Just one more client like you and I'll be in a sanatorium or San Quentin.
You'd be with most of your clients. Did she tell you where she was the night he was killed?
Yeah.
Where?
Following him.
Jesus, these women. All right, well, what did she see?
Nothing much. When he came home for dinner that evening, he told her he had a date with a girl at the St. Mark, ragging her, telling her that was her chance to get the divorce she wanted. Well, after he'd gone out, she began to think that maybe he might have had that date. So she got their car from the garage and drove down to the St. Mark, sitting in the car across the street. She saw him come out of the hotel, and she saw that he was shadowing a man and a girl. She says she saw the same girl with you last night, who'd come out just ahead of him. She knew then that he was working, had been kidding her. I suppose she was disappointed and mad. She sounded that way when she told me about it. And she followed Miles long enough to make sure he was shadowing the pair, and then she went up to your apartment. You weren't home.
What time was that?
Between 9:30 and 10, the first time.
The first time?
Oh, yeah. She drove around for half an hour or so and then tried again. And that would make it, say, 10:30. You were still out, so she drove back downtown and went to a movie to kill time until after midnight, when she thought she'd be more likely to find you in. She stayed in the movie till it closed. She says she had decided by then not to go back to your place again. She says she didn't know whether you'd like having her drop in that late.
That never stopped her before.
So she went to Tate's, the one on Ellis Street, had something to eat, and then went home alone. And while she was undressing, your messenger came with the news of his death.
You believe her?
Well, don't you?
How do I know? How do I know it isn't something you fixed up between us to tell me?
You don't cash many checks for strangers, do you, Sammy?
Not basketfuls.
That's right. I'm selling you out. Why don't you get an honest lawyer, one you can trust?
That fellow's dead.
What happened?
What happened where?
Why didn't she come?
She didn't get there?
I waited and waited and she didn't come and I couldn't get you on the phone, so I came down.
Another merry-go-round.
Did you send her out in a taxi?
Yeah.
Are you sure? Somebody must have followed
her. Nobody followed her. What do you think, I'm a goddamn schoolboy?
You certainly act like a goddamn schoolboy.
I'm going out to find her if I have to dig up sewers. You stay here till I'm back or you hear from me. For Christ's sake, let's do something right. Listen, you ought to know better than to pay any attention to me when I talk like that.
If you think I pay any attention to you, you're crazy.
Remember me? I got into your cab with a lady around noon.
I remember the lady. Quite a looker.
Where did you take her?
I don't know about this.
Listen, it's all right. I'm a private dick. If you want to play safe, we can ride up to your office and get your superintendent's okay.
Yeah, I guess it's all right. I took her to the ferry building.
By herself?
Yeah, sure. It was like this. When we got to Polk, she rapped on the glass and said she wanted to get a newspaper. So I stopped at the corner and whistled for a kid, and she got her paper.
Which paper?
The Call. Then I went out Sacramento some more, and just after we crossed Van Ness, she knocked on the glass again and said, take it to the ferry building.
Was she excited or anything?
Not so as I noticed.
And when you got to the ferry building?
She paid me off, and that was all.
Anybody waiting for her there?
I didn't see him if they was.
Which way did she go?
I don't know. Maybe upstairs or towards the stairs.
Take the newspaper with her?
Yeah, she had it tucked under her arm when she paid me.
Is that today's Call you got there?
Yeah.
Can I see it?
Keep it.
Thanks. Get yourself a smoke.
Thank you.
Suspect arrested as counterfeiter. Bay youth seeks death with bullet. Boys arrested as SF burglars after shooting. And nuts.
Hey, Seamus. Been looking for you.
Well, well.
Come on. He wants to see you.
I didn't expect you till 5:25. I hope I haven't kept you waiting.
Keep on riding, man. You're going to be picking iron out of your navel.
The cheaper the crook, the gaudier the patter. Well, let's go.
I went into the Alexandria, rode up to the 12th floor, and walked down the corridor towards Gutman's suite. Nobody else was in the corridor.
Spade suddenly grasped the boy from behind by both arms.
The boy struggled and squirmed, but he was impotent in the big man's grip. The boy kicked back, but his feet went between Spade's spread legs.
Spade released him and stepped back. In each of Spade's hands, when they came out of the boy's overcoat pockets, there was a heavy automatic pistol. This'll put you in solid with your boss.
Ah, come in, sir. Thank you for coming. Come in.
Here. Take your boy's heaters. You shouldn't let him run around with them. He'll get himself hurt.
Well, what's this?
A crippled newsie took them away from him, but I made him give them back.
The white-faced boy took the pistols out of Gutman's hands and pocketed them.
By Gesser, you're a chap worth knowing, an amazing character. Come in, come in. Sit down. Give me your hat.
The boy left the room by the door to the right of the entrance.
The fat man installed Spade in a green plush chair by the table, pressed a cigar upon him, held a light to it, mixed whiskey and carbonated water, put one glass in Spade's hand, and holding the other, sat down facing Spade.
Now, sir, I hope you'll let me apologize.
Never mind about that. Let's talk about the Black Bird.
All right, sir. Let's. This is going to be the most astounding thing you've ever heard, sir. And I say that knowing that a man of your caliber in your profession must have known some astounding things in his time. What do you know, sir, about the Order of the Hospital of St. John of Jerusalem, later called the Knights of Rhodes and other things?
Not much. Only what I remember from history in school. Crusaders or something.
Very good. Now, you don't remember that Suleiman the Magnificent chased them out of Rhodes in 1523?
No.
Well, sir, he did. And they settled in Crete. And they stayed there for 7 years until 1530, when they persuaded the Emperor Charles V to give them Malta, Gozo, and Tripoli.
Yes.
Yes, sir. But with these conditions. They were to pay the Emperor each year the tribute of one falcon in acknowledgement that Malta was still under Spain. And if they ever left the island, it was to revert to Spain. Understand? He was giving it to them, but not unless they used it. And they couldn't give it or sell it to anybody else.
Yes.
Have you any conception of the extreme, the immeasurable wealth of the Order at that time?
If I remember, they were pretty well fixed.
Pretty well, sir, is putting it mildly. They were rolling in wealth, sir. You've no idea. None of us has any idea. For years they had preyed on the Saracens. Had taken nobody knows what spoils of gems, precious metals, silks, ivories. The cream of the East. That is history, sir. We all know that the Holy Wars to them, as to the Templars, were largely a matter of loot.
Go on.
Well, now, the Emperor Charles has given them Malta, and all the rent he asks is one insignificant bird per annum, just as a matter of form. What could be more natural than for these immeasurably wealthy knights to look around for some way of expressing their gratitude? Well, sir, that's exactly what they did. And they hit on the happy thought of sending Charles for the first year's tribute, not an insignificant live bird, but a glorious golden falcon, encrusted from head to foot with the finest jewels in their coffers. And remember, sir, they had fine ones, the finest out of Asia. Well, sir, what do you think of that?
I don't know.
These are facts, historical facts. Not schoolbook history, not Mr. Wells's history, but history nevertheless. The archives of the Order from the 12th century on are still at Malta. They are not intact, but what is there holds no less than 3 references that can't be to anything else but this jeweled falcon. In J. Delaville LaRue's Les Archives de l'Ordre de Saint-Jean, there is a reference to it. Oblique, to be sure, but a reference still. And the unpublished, because unfinished at the time of his death, supplement to Paoli's Dels Origine et Instituto del Sacro Militare Ordine, has a clear and unmistakable statement of the facts I'm telling you.
All right.
All right, sir. Grand Master Villiers de l'Isle d'Adam had this foot-high jeweled bird made by Turkish slaves in the castle of St. Angelo and sent it to Charles, who was in Spain. He sent it in a galley, commanded by a French knight named Cormier, or Corvair, a member of the Order. It never reached Spain. You know of Barbarossa, Redbeard, Kair ed-Din?
Not personally.
A famous admiral of buccaneers sailing out of Algiers then. Well, sir, he took the knight's galley, and he took the bird. The bird went to Algiers. That's a fact. That's a fact that the French historian Pierre Dant put in one of his letters from Algiers. He wrote that the bird had been there for more than 100 years until it was carried away by Sir Francis Verney, the English adventurer who was with the Algerian buccaneers for a while. Maybe it wasn't, but Pierre Dan believed it was, and that's good enough for me. There's nothing said about the bird in Lady Frances Verney's memoirs of the Verney family during the 17th century, to be sure. I looked, and it's pretty certain that Sir Francis didn't have the bird when he died in a Messina hospital in 1615. He was stony broke. But, sir, there's no denying that the bird did go to Sicily. It was there, and it came into the possession there of Victor Amadeus II, some time after he became king in 1713, and it was one of his gifts to his wife when he married in Chambéry after abdicating. That is a fact, sir. Caruti, the author of Storia del Regno de Vittorio Amadeo II, himself vouched for it.
Then it's got to be true.
Indeed, sir. Maybe they... Amadeo and his wife... took it along with him to Turin when he tried to revoke his abdication. Be that as it may, it turned up next in the possession of a Spaniard who had been with the army that took Naples in 1734, the father of Don José Munino y Redondo, Count of Florida Blanca, who was Charles III's chief minister. There's nothing to show that it didn't stay in that family until at least the end of the Carlist War in 40. Then it appeared in Paris at just about the time that Paris was full of Carlists who had to get out of Spain. One of them must have brought it with him, but whoever he was, it's likely he knew nothing about its real value. It had been, no doubt as a precaution, during the Carlist trouble in Spain, painted or enameled over to look like nothing more than a fairly interesting black statuette. And in that disguise, sir, it was, you might say, kicked around Paris for 70 years by private owners and dealers too stupid to see what it was under the skin. Ah, let me freshen your glass, sir.
Finish your story.
For 70 years, sir, this marvelous item was, as you might say, a football in the gutters of Paris. Until 1911, when a Greek dealer named Karaleos Constantinides found it in an obscure shop. It didn't take Karaleos long to learn what it was and to acquire it. No thickness of enamel could conceal value from his eyes and nose. Well, sir, Karaleos was the man who traced most of its history and who identified it as what it actually was. I got wind of it and finally forced most of the history out of him, though I've been able to add a few details since. Karaleos was in no hurry to convert his find into money at once. He knew that, enormous as its intrinsic value was, a far higher, a terrific price could be obtained for it once its authenticity was established beyond doubt. Possibly he planned to do business with one of the modern descendants of the old order, the English Order of St. John of Jerusalem, the Prussian Johanniter Orden, or the Italian or German Long of the Sovereign Order of Malta, all wealthy orders. Ah, empty again. You begin to believe me a little?
I haven't said I didn't.
No, but how you looked. Well, sir, to hold it safe while pursuing his researches into its history, Karaleos had re-enameled the bird, apparently just as it is now. 1 year to the very day after he had acquired it. That was possibly 3 months after I'd made him confess to me. I picked up the Times in London and read that his establishment had been burglarized and he murdered. I was in Paris the next day. The bird was gone. By gad, sir, I was wild. I didn't believe anybody else knew what it was. I didn't believe he had told anybody but me. A great quantity of stuff had been stolen. And that made me think that the thief had simply taken the bird along with the rest of his plunder, not knowing what it was. Because I assure you that a thief who knew its value would not burden himself with anything else. No, sir. At least not anything less than crown jewels. That was 17 years ago. Well, sir, it took me 17 years to locate that bird. But I did it. I wanted it. And I'm not a man that's easily discouraged when he wants something. I wanted it, and I found it. I want it, and I'm going to have it. I traced it to the home of a Russian general, one Kemidov, in a Constantinople suburb. He didn't know a thing about it. It was nothing but a black enameled figure to him, but his natural contrariness, the natural contrariness of a Russian general, kept him from selling it to me when I made him an offer. Perhaps in my eagerness I was a little unskillful, though not very. I didn't know about that. But I did know I wanted it, and I was afraid this stupid soldier might begin to investigate his property, might chip off some of the enamel. So I sent some agents to get it. Well, sir, they got it. And I haven't got it. But I'm going to get it. Your glass, sir.
Then the bird doesn't belong to any of you, but to a General Kemidov.
Belong? Well, sir, you might say it belonged to the King of Spain, but I don't see how you can honestly grant anybody else clear title to it, except by right of possession. And an article of that value that is passed from hand to hand by such means is clearly the property of whoever can get hold of it.
Then it's Miss O'Shaughnessy's now.
No, sir. Except as my agent.
Oh.
There's no doubt that she has it now?
Not much.
Where?
I don't know exactly.
You said you did.
I meant to say, I know where to get it when the time comes.
And you do?
Yes.
Where?
Leave that to me. That's my end.
When?
When I'm ready.
Mr. Spade, where is Miss O'Shaughnessy now?
In my hands, safely tucked away.
Trust you for that, sir. Well, now, sir, before we sit down to talk prices, answer me this. How soon can you, how soon are you willing to produce the Falcon?
A couple of days.
That is satisfactory. But I forget our nourishment. Well, sir, here's to a fair bargain and profits large enough for both of us.
What's your idea of a fair bargain?
I have two proposals to make, sir, and either is fair. Take your choice. I will give you $25,000 when you deliver the Falcon to me, and another $25,000 as soon as I can get to New York. Or I will give you 25%, 25% of what I realize on the Falcon. There you are, sir, an almost immediate $50,000, or a vastly greater sum within, say, a couple of months.
How much greater?
Vastly. Who knows how much greater? Shall I say 100,000 or 250,000? Will you believe me if I name a sum that seems the probable minimum?
Why not?
What would you say, sir? To 500,000.
Then you think the dinghy is worth 2,000,000.
In your own words, why not?
That's a hell of a lot of dough.
That's a hell of a lot of dough. That is the absolute rock-bottom minimum, or Karaleos Constantinides was a blithering idiot. And he wasn't.
The minimum, huh? And, the max... maximum.
I refuse to guess. You'd think me crazy. I don't know. There's no telling how high it could go, sir. And that's the one and only truth about it.
Spade pulled his sagging lower lip tight against the upper. He shook his head impatiently. A sharp, frightened gleam awoke in his eyes and was smothered by the deepening muddiness. He stood up, helping himself up with his hands on the arm of his chair. He shook his head again, took an uncertain step forward. He laughed thickly. And wonders, God damn you.
Wilma!
The door opened and the boy came in.
Spade took an uncertain step. His face was gray now, with jaw muscles standing out like tumors under his ears.
The boy's leg darted out across Spade's leg in front. The boy, keeping his right hand under his coat, looked down at Spade.
Spade tried to get up.
The boy drew his right foot far back and...
Finally got back. What time is it?
6 o'clock. What are you doing here?
You told me to stay till you got back or phoned.
Oh, I... The sister of the boy who stood on the burning deck. Is that it?
I wasn't going to... Oh, your head! What happened?
I don't know whether I fell or was slugged. I don't think it amounts to much, but... It hurts like hell. I went visiting, was fed knockout drops, and came to 12 hours later, all spread out on a man's floor.
It's terrible. You'll have to get a doctor. You can't walk around with a head like that.
Well, it's not as bad as it looks, except for the headache. That might be mostly from the drops.
Did you find Miss O'Shaughnessy, Sam?
Not yet. Anything turn up after I left?
The district attorney's office phoned. He wants to see you.
Himself?
Yes, that's the way I understood it. And a boy came in with a message that Mr. Gutman would be delighted to talk to you before 5:30.
I got that. Talking to Mr. Gutman got me this.
Is that the G who phoned, Sam?
Yes.
And what?
He wants something he thinks I can get. I persuaded him I could keep him from getting it if he didn't make the deal with me before 5:30. Then... Uh-huh. Sure. It was after I'd told him he'd have to wait a couple of days that he fed me the junk. It's not likely he thought I'd die. He'd have to know I'd be up and around in 10 or 12 hours, so... Maybe the answer's that he figured he could get it without my help in that time if I was fixed so I couldn't butt in. I hope to Christ he was wrong. Did you get any word from the O'Shaughnessy?
No. Has this got anything to do with her?
Something.
The thing he wants belongs to her?
Lord of the King of Spain. Sweetheart, you've got an uncle who teaches history or something over at the university, don't you?
A cousin? Why?
If we brightened his life with an alleged historical secret 4 centuries old, could we trust him to keep it in the dark a while?
Oh, yes. He's good people.
Fine, I'm going to tell you a story. Ask your cousin if he's ever run across anything that might have some connection with it. Is it probable? Is it possible? Even barely possible? Or is it the bunk? All right, now, get your pencil and book. I'm going to tell you a story. After a leisurely breakfast at the palace, during which he read both morning papers, Spade went home, shaved, bathed, rubbed ice on his bruised temple, and put on fresh clothes. He went to Bridget O'Shaughnessy's apartment at the Coronet. Nobody was in the apartment. Nothing had been changed in it since his last visit. He went to the Alexandria Hotel.
I'm sorry, sir. None of the occupants seems to be in Mr. Gutman's suite.
Who exactly are the occupants of Mr. Gutman's suite?
Well, there's his secretary, Wilmer Cook, and his daughter, Rhea.
Gutman has a daughter?
Oh, yes, sir. A very attractive girl, about 16 or 17 years old, perhaps.
They haven't checked out, have they?
Oh, no, sir.
How long have they been here?
They arrived 10 days ago.
Spade went to the Belvedere and found the hotel detective.
You've been searching Cairo's room for an hour, Sam. You find anything?
Blank so far.
Any particular thing we're supposed to be looking for?
No.
What's Cairo's racket?
That's something else I'd like to know. Well, this wastebasket's our last shot.
What do you got there?
Something torn out of the newspaper. There's part of an ad on one side and it looks like shipping news on the other.
You think it's significant?
Let's see here. Arrived today, 5:17 a.m. Tahiti from Sydney and Papeete. 6:05 a.m. Admiral Peoples from Astoria. 8:05 a.m. La Paloma from Hong Kong. Hong Kong. La Paloma.
What's this all about?
Looks like the gent's interested in the boat.
Well, there's no law against that. Or is there? You all through here now?
Yeah, thanks a lot, Luke. Give me a ring as soon as Cairo comes in.
Sure.
Kearney, 1401, please. Where is the Paloma docked? In from Hong Kong yesterday morning. La Paloma. Thanks. Davenport, 2020, please. Detective Bureau, please. Hey, Sergeant Polehouse there. Hello, Tom. This is Sam Spade. Yes, Effie gave me your message. I tried to get you yesterday afternoon. Sure. Suppose you go to lunch with me. Right. Davenport, 0170, please. Hello, DA's office. This is Samuel Spade. My secretary got a phone message yesterday that Mr. Bryan wanted to see me. Will you ask him what time's the most convenient for him? Yes, Spade. S-P-A-D-E. Yes. 2:30. All right, thanks. Hyde Park, 2037. Hello. Darling, let me talk to Sid. Hello, Sid. Sam, I've got a date with the district attorney at 2:30 this afternoon. Will you give me a ring? Here or there, around 4, just to see that I'm not in trouble. Now the hell with your Saturday afternoon golf. Your job's to keep me out of jail. Right. Right, Sid. Bye.
Sam! My cousin says it could be, and he hopes it is. He says he's not a specialist in that field, but the names and dates are all right, and at least none of your authorities or their works are out-and-out fakes. He's all excited about it.
Well, that's swell, as long as he doesn't get too enthusiastic to see through it if it's phony.
Oh, he wouldn't. Not dead. He's too good at his stuff for that.
Uh-huh. The whole damn Perrine family's wonderful. Including you and the smudge of soot on your nose.
Oh, he's not a Perrine, he's a Christie. I must have gotten that from the fire.
The Perrine Christie enthusiasm in Knight Berkeley?
Well, there was a boat on fire when I came back. They were towing it out from the pier, and the smoke blew all over our ferry boat.
Wait a second. You were near enough to see the name of the boat?
Yes. La Paloma. Why?
I'm damned if I know why, sister.
Sam, listen. Forget about the other night. He was dead wrong. But you know anybody's liable to lose his head if you ride him that way.
Was that what you wanted to see me about?
Mostly.
Dundee send you?
You know he didn't. He's as bullheaded as you are.
No, he's not, Tom. He just thinks he is.
Are you ever going to grow up?
What do you think I should do? Go around and tell him I hope my chin didn't hurt his fist? Phil Archer been in with any more hot tips?
Oh, for credit. Dundee didn't think you shot Miles. But what else could he do except run the lead down? You'd have done the same thing in his place, and you know it.
Yeah? What made him think I didn't do it? What makes you think I didn't? Or don't you?
Thursby shot Miles.
You think he did?
He did. And Webley was his, and the slug and Miles came out of it.
Sure?
Dead sure.
Then that leaves Thursby the only one I killed.
Christ's sake, aren't you... Are you never gonna forget that? That's out. You know it as well as I do.
All right. You know it's out, and I know it's out. What does Dundee know?
He knows it's out.
What woke him up?
We dug up a record on Thursby.
Yeah? Who was he?
Well, he was a St. Louis gunman the first we hear of him. He took up with Dixie Monahan. That was when Dixie was almost as big a shot as Nick the Greek in Chicago gambling. This Thursby was Dixie's bodyguard, and he took the run out with him when Dixie got in wrong with the rest of the boys over some debts he couldn't or wouldn't pay off. That was a couple of years back. This is the first time him or Thursby's been seen since.
Dixie's been seen?
No, not unless you've seen him or know somebody's seen him.
I haven't. This is all new stuff to me.
Oh, yeah, sure it is.
You know, I wish I knew half as much as you guys think I do. Check, please. Miss, please. Gotta go.
Yeah?
Got a hot date.
O'Shaughnessy or Iva Archer?
Neither one. Try the DA.
How do you do, Spade?
Brian?
Ask Healy to come in. You and the police haven't been hitting it off so well, have you?
Nothing serious. Dundee gets too enthusiastic. I take it from your notepad, Sonny, that you're a stenographer.
Yes, sir.
Anything I say will be used against me, right?
That always holds good. Who killed Thursby?
I don't know.
Perhaps you don't, but you certainly could make an excellent guess.
Maybe, but I wouldn't.
Really?
I wouldn't. My guess might be excellent, or it might be crummy. But Mrs. Spade didn't raise any children dippy enough to make guesses in front of a district attorney and a stenographer.
Why shouldn't you if you've nothing to conceal?
Everybody has something to conceal.
And you have?
My guess is for one thing.
If you'd prefer not having the stenographer here, we can dismiss him. It was simply as a matter of convenience that I brought him in.
I don't mind him a damn bit. I'm willing to have anything I say put down, and I'm willing to sign it.
We don't intend asking you to sign. I wish you wouldn't regard this as a formal inquiry at all. And please don't think I have any belief, much less confidence, in those theories the police seem to have formed.
No?
Not a particle.
I'm glad of that. What's your theory?
Tell me who Archer was shadowing Thursby for, and I'll tell you who killed Thursby.
You're as wrong as Dundee.
Don't misunderstand me. I don't say your client killed Thursby or had him killed, but I do say that knowing who your client is, or was, I'll mighty soon know who killed Thursby.
I don't exactly get that.
You don't? Then suppose I put it this way. Where is Dixie Monahan?
Putting it that way doesn't help much. I still don't get it.
We know Thursby was Monahan's bodyguard and went with him when Monahan found it wise to vanish from Chicago. We know Monahan welched on something like $200,000 worth of bets when he disappeared. We don't know, not yet, who his creditors were. But we all know what's likely to happen to a gambler who welches, and to his bodyguard, when his creditors find him. It's happened before.
Well, what do you think? Did I kill him for his creditors, or did I just find him and let them do their own killing?
No, no, no. You misunderstand me.
I hope to Christ I do.
I only mean that you might have been involved in it without knowing what it was.
I see. So you don't think I'm naughty? You just think I'm dumb.
Nonsense. Suppose someone came to you and engaged you to find Monahan, telling you they had reasons for thinking he was in the city. But someone might give you a completely false story, or any one of a dozen or more would do, or might say he was a debtor who had run away without giving you any of the details. How could you tell what was behind it? How would you know it wasn't an ordinary piece of detective work? And under those circumstances, you certainly couldn't be held responsible for your part in it, unless you made yourself an accomplice by concealing your knowledge of the murderer's identity or information that would lead to his apprehension.
That's what you meant?
Precisely.
All right, then there's no hard feelings, but you're wrong.
Prove it.
I can't prove it to you now, I can tell you.
Then tell me.
Nobody ever hired me to do anything about Dixie Monahan.
But by your own admission, somebody did hire you to do something about his bodyguard, Thursby.
Yeah, about his ex-bodyguard, Thursby.
Ex? You know that positively?
I don't know anything positively, except that my client wasn't interested in Monahan. Had never been interested in Monahan. I heard that Thursby took Monahan out to the Orient and lost him.
That opens another angle. Monahan's friends could have knocked Thursby off for ditching Monahan.
Dead gamblers don't have any friends.
It opens up two new lines. It narrows down to three things. Number one, Thursby was killed by the gamblers Monahan at Welshtown in Chicago. Number two, he was killed by friends of Monahan. Or number three, he sold Monahan out to his enemies and then fell out with them and they killed him.
Or number four, he died of old age. You aren't serious, are you? You got Arnold Rothstein on the brain.
Right or wrong, I am nonetheless the district attorney.
I thought this was an informal talk.
I am a sworn officer of the law 24 hours a day, and neither formality nor informality justifies your withholding from me evidence of crime, except, of course, on certain constitutional grounds.
You mean, if it might incriminate me? Well, I've got better grounds than that. A grounds that suit me better. My clients are entitled to a decent amount of secrecy. Maybe I can be made to talk to a grand jury or even a coroner's jury, but I haven't been called before either yet. And it's a cinch I'm not going to advertise my client's business until I have to. Then again, you and the police have both accused me of being mixed up in the other night's murders. I've had trouble with both of you before. As far as I can see, my best chance of clearing myself of the trouble you're trying to make for me is by bringing in the murderers. All tied up. And my only chance of ever catching them and tying them up and bringing them in is by keeping away from you and the police. Because neither of any of you show any signs of knowing what the hell it's all about. You getting this right, son? Or am I going too fast for you?
Oh, no, sir. I'm getting it all right.
Good work. Now, if you want to go to the board and tell them I'm obstructing justice and ask them to revoke my license, hop to it. You tried it before and it didn't get you anything but a good laugh all around.
But look
here. And I don't want any more of these informal talks. I've got nothing to tell you or the police, and I'm goddamn tired of being called things by every crackpot on the city payroll. You want to see me? Pinch me. Subpoena me. Or something, and I'll come down with my lawyer. I'll see you at the inquest. Maybe.
You haven't found her yet?
Nope.
How's your head?
It's all right, but I've got plenty of headache.
Here, let me rub your temples.
You're an angel.
You've got to find her, Sam. It's more than a day.
I haven't got to do anything. But if you let me rest this damn head a minute or two, I'll go out and find her.
Poor head. You know where she is? Have you any idea?
I know where she went.
Where?
Down to the boat you saw burning. She went down there. She wasn't taken. She went down there instead of to your house when she learned the boat was in. She got down there at a little after noon yesterday. That means she went straight there after leaving the cab at the ferry building. It's only a few piers away. Captain wasn't on board. His name's Jacoby, and she asked for him by name. He was uptown on business. That would mean he didn't expect her, or not at that time anyway. She waited there till he came back at 4 o'clock. They spent the time from then till mealtime in his cabin, and she ate with him. After the meal, Captain Jacoby had three more visitors. One of them was Gutman, and one was Cairo, and one was the kid who delivered Gutman's message to you yesterday. Those three came together while Bridget was there, and the five of them did a lot of talking in the captain's cabin. It's hard to get anything out of the crew, but they had a row, and somewhere around 11 o'clock that night, a gun went off there.
In the captain's cabin?
Yeah. The watchman beat it down there, but the captain met him outside and told him everything was all right. There was a fresh bullet hole in one corner of the cabin, up high enough to make it likely that the bullet didn't go through anybody to get there. As far as I could learn, there was only the one shot. But as far as I could learn, it wasn't very far. Well, they left around midnight, the captain and his four visitors all together. That's all of it. The captain hasn't been back since. He didn't keep a date he had this noon with some shipping agent, and they haven't found him to tell him about the fire.
And the fire?
I don't know. It was discovered in the hold, aft in the rear basement, late this morning. The chances are it got started sometime yesterday. They got it out all right, though it did damage enough since the...
Just then, the corridor door opened.
Spade shut his mouth.
Effie Perrine jumped down from the desk.
Madam, ma'am, open the connecting door before she could reach it. Where's Spade?
His voice brought Spade up erect and alert in his chair.
It was a voice harsh and rasping with agony.
Effie Perrine, frightened, stepped out of the man's way.
He's stood in the doorway. It held tight against his chest was a brown paper wrapped parcel
bound with thin rope and ellipsoid somewhat larger than an American football. You know.
Lock the door.
Is he?
Yes. Oh. Shot through the chest, maybe half a dozen times.
Henri.
It's too late for a doctor now. I've got to think before we do anything. He couldn't have come very far with those in him. Why in hell couldn't he have just stood up long enough to say something? Pull yourself together, for Christ's sake. Don't get sick on me now. We'll have a look at that bundle.
Do you think it's...
We'll soon know. We've got the damn thing, Angel.
Ouch! You're hurting me!
Answer it.
Hello? Yes? Oh? Oh, yes. 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 Hold the line. Hello? 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 It was Miss O'Shaughnessy. She wants you. She's at the Alexandria. In danger. Her voice was... Oh, it was awful, Sam. And something happened to her before she could finish. Go help her, Sam.
I've got to take care of this fellow first.
No, no, no. You've got to get to her. Don't you see, Sam? He had the thing that was hers, and he came to you with it. Don't you see? He was helping her, and they killed him, and now she's... Oh, you've got to go.
All right, all right. As soon as I've gone, phone the police. Tell them how it happened. Mm-hmm. But don't drag any names in. You don't know. I got the phone call, and I told you I had to go out, but didn't say where. Forget this thing. Tell it as it happened. But forget he had a bundle. Unless they pin you down. If they seem to know about it, you'll have to admit it. But that's not likely. If they do, then I took the bundle away with me, unopened.
You're taking that with you?
Get it straight now. Everything happened the way it did happen. But without the dingus, unless they already know about it, don't deny it. Just don't mention it. And I got the phone call, not you. And you don't know anything about anybody else having any connection with this fellow. You don't know anything about him, and you can't talk about my business until you see me. You got it?
Yes, Sam.
You're a damn good man, sister.
Who... Do you know who he is?
Uh-uh. But I'd guess he was Captain Jacoby, master of La Paloma.
Dashiell Hammett's The Maltese Falcon, Act 3.
Carrying a parcel lightly under his arm, Spade went from his office building to Kearney and Post Streets, where he hailed a passing taxicab. The cab carried him to the Pickwick Stage Terminal in Fifth Street. He checked the bird at the parcel room there, put the check into a stamped envelope, wrote M.F. Holland and a San Francisco Post Office box number on the envelope, sealed it, and dropped it into a mailbox. From the Stage Terminal, another taxicab carried him to the Alexandria Hotel.
The door was opened by a small, fair-haired girl in a shimmering yellow dressing gown. Mr. Spade?
Yes. Oh. Christ, what? Come on, kid. Can you walk? Lean on me. That's right. Left. Right. Come on, walk. Now walk with me. Left. Right. That's good. Now we turn. Come on. Come on. You're doing fine. What did they do? Speak to me now. Did they dope you? The same stuff they gave me, right?
Yes.
Keep walking. Keep walking. That's fine. That's fine now. Okay, who are you? Who are you?
Rhea Gutman.
Gutman's daughter.
Yes.
Where? Honey, where's Bridget?
She said you'd come. You were so long.
Come on now. Keep walking. Walk with me now. This is right.
No,
that's good.
No. Tell you.
Speak. Yeah, go out. I hear you.
Sleep. No, save her.
Bridget.
Yes.
They have Bridget.
Took her. Burlingame. 26 Angry.
Trent.
Hurry.
I've got it. I've got it. I've got it. Who took her? Your father?
Yes.
Who else was there?
Wilbur.
Yes, oh, Wilmer, yes.
Cairo,
yes. Who shot Jacoby?
Go! She's...
No. Please, stay awake. Stay awake till the doctor comes.
No. Father.
Please.
Please kill me.
Keep talking.
I swear you won't.
Listen, you're sure you can sleep the stuff off all right?
Yeah.
Where's your bed? Come on, walk. Walk to the bed. He laid the girl on her bed, removed her slippers, raised her a little to slide the yellow dressing gown off, fixed a pillow under her head, and put the covers up over her. Davenport, 2020. Emergency hospital, please. Hello. There's a girl in Suite 12C at the Alexandria Hotel. She's been drugged. Yes. You better send somebody over there to take a look at her right away. This is Mr. Hooper of the Alexandria. Hello, Frank. This is Sam Spade. Can you let me have a car with a driver who'll keep his mouth shut? To go down to the peninsula right away. Just a couple of hours. Right. Have him pick me up as soon as he can make it. Hello, Angel. What's the good word?
Miss O'Shaughnessy?
No. I ran into a plant. A wild goose chase. Are you sure it was her voice?
Yes.
Well, it was hooey. Everything go okay with the coppers?
Yes, but that boy was there. The one who brought the message from Gutman. He didn't come in, but the police left the door open while they were there, and I saw him standing outside. The next time I looked, he was gone.
Damn lucky for you, sister, that the coppers got there first.
What is...
You better hit the hay. You must be all in.
Sam, what is...
Save it till Monday. I want to hang up before your mother grabs the line and gives me hell for dragging her lamb through gutters. Midnight was a few minutes away when Spade reached his home. He put his key into the street door's lock.
Oh, I thought you'd never come.
You've been waiting?
Yes, in a doorway up the street.
Can you make it all right, or should I carry you?
No, I'll be right. When I can get where I can sit down.
Then let's go in.
Gutman stood smiling benevolently at them.
The boy Wilmer came out of the kitchen behind them. Black pistols were gigantic in his small hands.
Cairo came from the bathroom. He too had a pistol.
Well, sir, we're all here, as you can see for yourself. Now, let's come in and sit down and be comfortable and talk.
Sure. We'll talk.
The boy put away one of the pistols and came up close behind Spade.
Get away. You're not going to frisk me.
Stand still. Shut up.
Get away. Put your paw on me and I'm going to make you use the gun. Ask your boss if he wants me shot up before we talk.
Never mind, Wilmer. You are certainly a most headstrong individual. Well, let's be seated.
I told you I don't like that punk. Spade took Bridget O'Shaughnessy to the sofa by the windows.
They sat close together, her head against his left shoulder.
His left arm around her shoulders.
She had stopped trembling. Had stopped panting. The appearance of Gutman and his companions seemed to have robbed her of that freedom of personal movement and emotion that is animal, leaving her alive, conscious, but quiescent as a plant.
Gutman lowered himself into the padded rocking chair.
Cairo chose another armchair by the table.
The boy Wilmer did not sit down. He stood in the doorway where Cairo had stood, letting his one visible pistol hang down at his side, looking under curling lashes at Spade's body.
Cairo put his pistol on the table beside him.
That daughter of yours is nice looking. Too nice to be messed up like that.
Yes, sir. That was a shame. But you must admit it served its purpose.
Anything would have. Naturally, I wanted to see you as soon as I had the Falcon. Cash customers, why not? I went to Burlingame expecting to run into this sort of meeting. I didn't know you were blundering around, half an hour late, trying to get me out of the way so you could find Jacoby again before he found me.
Well, sir, in any case, here we are, having our little meeting, if that's what you wanted.
That's what I wanted. How soon are you ready to make the first payment and take the Falcon off my hands?
Sam!
Well, sir, as to that...
Cairo, hands and thighs leaned forward in his chair, breathing between parted soft lips. His dark eyes had the surface shine of lacquer. They shifted focus wildly from Spade's face to Gutman's, from Gutman's to Spade's.
Well, sir, as to that...
2, 4, 6, 8... 10,000. We were talking about more money than this.
Yes, sir, we were. But we were talking then. This is actual money. Genuine coin of the realm, sir. With a dollar of this, you could buy more than with $10 of talk. There are more of us to be taken care of now. And, well, sir, in short, the situation has changed.
Sure. You're together now. But I've got the Falcon.
I shouldn't think it would be necessary to remind you, Mr. Spade, that though you may have the Falcon... We certainly have you.
I'm trying not to let that worry me. We'll come back to the money later. There's another thing that's got to be taken care of first. You've got to have a fall guy. The police have got to have a victim. Somebody they can stick for those 3 murders we...
2. Only 2 murders, Mr. Spade. Thursby undoubtedly killed your partner.
All right, 2. What difference does that make? The point is, we've got to feed the police somebody.
Well, sir, from what we've seen and heard of you, I don't think we'll have to bother ourselves about that. We can leave the handling of the police to you, all right. You won't need any of our inexpert help.
If that's what you think, you haven't seen or heard enough.
Now, come, Mr. Spade. You can't expect us to believe at this late date that you are the least bit afraid of the police, or that you are not quite able to handle...
I'm not a damn bit afraid of them, and I know how to handle them. That's what I'm trying to tell you. The way to handle them is to toss them a victim. Somebody they can hang the works on.
Well, sir, I grant you that's one way of doing it, but...
But hell, it's the only way. I know what I'm talking about. I've been through it all before and expect to go through it again. At one time or another, I've had to tell everybody from the Supreme Court down to go to hell. And I've got away with it. I got away with it because I never let myself forget that a day of reckoning was coming. I never forgot that... When the day of reckoning comes, I want to be all set to march into headquarters, pushing a victim in front of me, saying, "Here, you chumps, is your criminal." As long as I can do that, I can put my thumb to my nose and wiggle my fingers at all the laws in the book. The first time I can't do it, my name's Mud. There hasn't been a first time yet. This isn't going to be it. That's flat.
Well, that's a system that's got a lot to recommend it, sir. By gad, it has. And if it was anyway practical this time, I'd be the first to say, stick to it by all means, sir. But this just happens to be a case where it's not possible. That's the way it is with the best of systems. There comes a time when you've got to make exceptions, and a wise man just goes ahead and makes them. Well, sir, that's just the way it is in this case. And I don't mind telling you that I think you're being very well paid for making an exception. Now... Maybe it will be a little more trouble to you than if you had your victim to hand over to the police, but... Oh, you're not a man that's afraid of a little bit of trouble. You know how to do things, and you'll land on your feet in the end, no matter what happens. You'll manage that, sir.
I know what I'm talking about. This is my city and my game. I could manage to land on my feet, sure, this time, but the next time I tried to put over a fast one, it'd stop me so fast I'd swallow my teeth. And the hell with that. You birds will be in New York or Constantinople or someplace else. I'm in business here.
But surely
I can't. I won't. I mean it. Listen to me, Gutman. I'm telling you what's best for us all. If we don't give the police a fall guy, it's 10 to 1 they'll sooner or later stumble on information about the Falcon. Then you'll have to duck for cover with it no matter where you are. And that's not going to help you make a fortune off it. Give them a fall guy and they'll stop right there.
Well, sir, that's just the point. Will they stop right here? Or won't the fall guy be a fresh clue that as likely as not will lead them to information about the Falcon? And, on the other hand, wouldn't you say they were stopped right now? And that the best thing for us to do is leave well enough alone?
Jesus, you don't know what it's all about either. They're not asleep, Gutman. They're lying low, waiting. Try to get that. I'm in it up to my neck and they know it. That's all right, as long as I do something when the time comes. But it won't be all right if I don't. Listen, Gutman, we've absolutely got to give them a victim. There's no way out of it. Let's give them the punk.
Hey!
Wilmer?
He actually did shoot Thursby and Jacoby, didn't he? Anyway, He's made to order for the part. Let's pin the necessary evidence on him and turn him over to the cops.
The boy in the doorway tightened the corners of his mouth in what may have been a minute smile.
Joel Cairo's dark face was open mouth, opened eyes yellowish and amazed.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy had moved away from Spade and had twisted herself around the sofa to stare at him. There was a suggestion of hysterical laughter behind the startled confusion in her face.
Oh, my guess, sir. You're a character, that you are, yes, sir. There's never any telling what you'll do or say next, except that it's bound to be something astonishing.
There's nothing funny about it. It's our best bet. With him in their hands, the police will have to...
Oh, but my dear man, can't you see? If I even for a moment thought of doing it... But that's ridiculous, too. I feel towards Wilmer just exactly as if he were my own son. I really do. But if I even for a moment thought of doing what you propose, what in the world do you think would keep Wilmer from telling the police every last detail about the Falcon and all of us?
If we had to, we could have him killed resisting arrest.
Hey!
But we won't have to go that far. Let him talk his head off. I promise you nobody will do anything about it. That's easy enough to fix.
How? What do you think of this, Wilmer? It's funny, eh?
Yeah, it's funny. Son of a...
How do you feel now, Angel? Any better?
Yes, much better, only I'm frightened.
Don't be. Nothing very bad's gonna happen. You want a drink?
Not now, thanks. Be careful, Sam.
How?
How what?
Well, sir, if you're really serious about this suggestion of yours, the least we can do in common politeness is to hear you out. Now, how are you going about fixing it so that Wilmer won't be able to do us any harm?
Nah. I wouldn't want to take advantage of anybody's politeness, no matter how common, so forget it.
Oh, now, come. You make me decidedly uncomfortable. I shouldn't have laughed. And I apologize most humbly and sincerely. I wouldn't want to seem to ridicule anything you'd suggest, Mr. Spade, regardless of how much I disagreed with you. For you must know that I have the greatest respect and admiration for your astuteness. Now, mind you, I don't see how this suggestion of yours can be in any way practical. Even leaving out the fact that I couldn't feel any different towards Wilmer if he was my own flesh and blood. But I'll consider it a personal favor as well as a sign that you have accepted my apology, sir, if you'll go ahead and outline the rest of it.
Fair enough. Brian is like most district attorneys. He's more interested in how his record will look on paper than in anything else. He'd rather drop a doubtful case than try it and have it go against him. To be sure of convicting one man, he'll let half a dozen equally guilty accomplices go free. If trying to convict them all might confuse his case, that's the choice we'll give him, and he'll gobble it up. He wouldn't want to know about the Falcon. He'll be tickled pink to persuade himself that anything the punk tells him about is a lot of chewing gum in an attempt to muddle things up. Leave that end to me. I can show him that if he starts fooling around trying to gather up everybody, he's going to have a tangled case that no jury will be able to make heads or tails of. While if he sticks to the punk, he can get a conviction standing on his head.
No, sir. I'm afraid that won't do. Won't do at all. I don't see how this district attorney of yours can link Thursby and Jacoby and Wilmer together without having to...
You don't know district attorneys. The Thursby angle is easy. He was a gunman, and so's your punk. Brian's already got a theory about that. There'll be no catch there. Well, Christ, they can only hang the punk once. Why try him for Jacoby's murder after he's been convicted of Thursby's? They simply close the record by writing it up against him and let it go at that. If as is likely enough he used the same gun on both, the bullets will match up. Everybody will be satisfied.
Yes?
You bastard! Get up and shoot it out if you got the guts! I've taken all the riding from you I'm gonna take!
Young Wild West, maybe you ought to tell him that shooting me before you get your hands on the Falcon would be bad for business.
Now, Wilmer, we can't have any of that. You shouldn't let yourself attach so much importance to these things. You should...
Make him lay off me, then. I'm gonna fog him if he keeps it up, and there won't be anything that'll stop me from doing it.
Now, Wilmer, your plan is, sir, as I said in the first place, not at all practical. Let's not say anything more about it.
I say what I please.
You certainly do, and that's one of the things I've always admired in you. But this matter is, as I say, not at all practical, so there's not the least bit of use of discussing it any further, as you can see for yourself.
I can't see it for myself, and you haven't made me see it, and I don't think you can. Let's get this straight. Am I wasting time talking to you? I thought this was your show. Should I do my talking to the punk? I know how to do that.
No, sir. You're quite right in dealing with me.
All right. Now I've got another suggestion. It's not as good as the first, but it's better than nothing. You want to hear it?
Most assuredly.
Give them Cairo.
Cairo hastily picked up his pistol from the table beside him. He held it tight in his lap with both hands.
Do what?
Give the police Cairo.
Well, by God, sir.
It's not as good as giving them the punk. Cairo's not a gunman, and he carries a smaller piece than Thursby and Jacoby were shot with. We'll have to go to more trouble framing him, but that's better than not giving the police anybody.
Suppose we give them you, Mr. Spade, or Miss O'Shaughnessy. How about that, if you're so set on giving them somebody?
You people want the Falcon? I've got it. A fall guy is part of the price I'm asking. As for Miss O'Shaughnessy, if you think she can be rigged for the part, I'm perfectly willing to discuss it with you.
No! You seem to forget you are not in a position to insist on anything.
Come now, gentlemen. Let's keep our discussion on a friendly basis. But there certainly is something in what Mr. Cairo says. You must take into consideration the fact...
Like hell I must. If you kill me, how are you going to get the bird? If I know you can't afford to kill me till you have it, how are you going to scare me into giving it to you?
Well, sir, there are other means of persuasion besides killing and threatening to kill.
Sure, but they're not much good unless the threat of death is behind them to hold the victim down. You see what I mean? If you try anything I don't like, I won't stand for it. I'll make it a matter of your having to call it off or kill me, knowing that you can't afford to kill me.
Oh, I see what you mean. That is an attitude, sir, that calls for the most delicate judgment on both sides. Because, as you know, sir, men are likely to forget in the heat of action where their best interest lies and let their emotions carry them away.
That's the trick from my side. To make my play strong enough that it ties you up, but yet not make you mad enough to bump me off against your better judgment.
By gad, sir, you are a character.
Joel Cairo jumped up from his chair and went around behind the boy and behind Gutman's chair. He bent over the back of Gutman's chair and, screening his mouth and the fat man's ear with his empty hand, whispered.
Gutman listened attentively, shutting his eyes.
2-1, they're selling you out, son.
Your boy didn't say anything. Trembling in his knees, began to shake the knees of his trousers.
I hope you're not letting yourself be influenced by the guns these pocket edition desperados are waving around. I've practiced taking them away from both of them. There'll be no trouble there. The punk is going down.
All right!
Wilma!
Don't do that!
Spade pushed Cairo aside gently and drove his left fist against the boy's chin.
Here, watch!
Cairo sprang at Spade, clawing at his face with curved stick fingers of both hands.
Jesus, you're a pip. Stop it, I'll hurt you.
Oh, you big coward!
Disc, disc. Careless. Your boys dropped their toys. Will spread Wilmer on the sofa. He put his right arm under the boy's arm and around his back. Put his left forearm under the boy's knees and lifted him without apparent effort. Carried him to the sofa.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy got up quickly and...
Spade laid the boy there. With his right hand, Spade patted the boy's clothes, found his second pistol, added it to the others in his left hand, and turned his back on the sofa.
Cairo was already sitting beside the boy's head.
Well, there's our fall guy. Don't be a damn fool again. You let Cairo whisper to you, and you held the kid while I pasted him. You can't laugh that off, and you're likely to get shot trying to. On the other side of it, you say yes right now, or I'll turn the Falcon and the whole goddamn lot of you in.
I don't like that, sir.
You won't like it. Well?
You can have him.
That's swell. It'll be all right with Cairo?
I don't know. That part will have to be strictly up to you, sir.
Cairo, we're going to give him to the police. Got to get the details fixed before he comes to.
Don't you think we've done enough to him without that?
No.
Please don't do this, Mr. Gutman. You must realize that...
That's settled. The question is, what are you going to do about it? Coming in or getting out?
I don't like it either. But we can't help ourselves now. We really can't.
What are you doing, Cairo? In or out?
Can I choose?
You can, but you ought to know that if the answer is out, we'll give you to the police with your boyfriend.
Oh, come, Mr. Spade. That is not
like
necessary.
Hell we'll let him walk out on us. He'll either come in or he'll go in. We can't have a lot of loose ends hanging around. Good God, is the first thing you guys ever stole? You're a fine lot of lollipops. What are you going to do next? Get down and pray? Well, what's it going to be?
You give me no choice. I come in.
Good. Let me see. It's 2 o'clock. I can't get the Falcon till daylight, or maybe 8 o'clock. We got plenty of time to arrange everything.
Where is it? I don't really care, sir. What I had in mind was that it would be best for all concerned if we did not get out of each other's sight until our business has been transacted. You have the envelope?
Miss O'Shaughnessy has it.
Yes, I have it. I picked it up.
That's all right. Hang on to it. We won't have to lose sight of each other. I can have the Falcon brought here.
That would be excellent, sir. Then, sir, in exchange for the $10,000 and Wilmer, you will give us the Falcon and an hour or two of grace, so we won't be in the city when you surrender him to the authorities.
You don't have to duck. It'll be airtight.
That may be, sir. But nevertheless, we'll feel safer, well, out of the city when Wilmer is being questioned by your district attorney.
Suit yourself. I can hold him here all day if you want. Now let's get the details fixed. Why did he shoot Thursby? And why and where and how did he shoot Jacoby?
Now, come, sir. You can't expect that. We've given you the money and Wilmer. That is our part of the agreement.
I do expect it. A fall guy is what I asked for. And he's not a fall guy, unless he's a cinch to take the fall. Well, to cinch that, I've got to know what's what. What are you bellyaching about anyway? You're not going to be sitting so damn pretty if you leave him in out.
Well, there's ample evidence of his guilt, sir. Both men were shot with those weapons. It's a very simple matter for the police department experts to determine that the bullets that killed the men were fired from those weapons. You know that. You've mentioned it yourself. And that, it seems to me, is ample proof of his guilt.
Maybe, but the thing's more complicated than that, and I've got to know what happened so I can be sure the parts that won't fit are all covered up.
Apparently, you've forgotten you assured us it would be a very simple affair. You see, I advise you not to do this. I don't think...
It doesn't make a damn bit of difference what either of you think. It's too late for that now, and you're in too deep. Why did he kill Thursby?
You are an uncommonly difficult person to get the best of. I begin to think that we made a mistake in not letting you alone from the very first. By gad, I do, sir.
You haven't done so bad. You're staying out of jail, and you're getting the Falcon. What do you want? Anyhow, you know where you stand now. Now, why did he kill Thursby?
Thursby was a notorious killer, and Miss O'Shaughnessy's ally. We knew that removing him in just that manner would make her stop and think that perhaps it would be best to patch up her differences with us, after all, besides leaving her without so violent a protector. You see, sir, I am being candid with you.
Yes, keep it up. You didn't think he might have the Falcon?
We didn't think that for a minute. We had the advantage of knowing Miss O'Shaughnessy far too well for that. Now, she had given the Falcon to Captain Jacoby in Hong Kong to be brought over on the Paloma, while she and Thursby took a faster boat. We didn't know about that then. Still, we didn't for a minute think that, if only one of them knew where it was, Thursby was the one.
You didn't try to make a deal with him before you gave him the works?
Yes, sir, we certainly did. I talked to him myself that night. Wilmer had located him 2 days before and had been trying to follow him to wherever he was meeting Miss O'Shaughnessy, but Thursby was too crafty for that, even if he didn't know he was being watched. So that night, Wilmer went to his hotel, learned he wasn't in, and waited outside for him. I suppose Thursby returned immediately after killing your partner. Be that as it may, Wilmer brought him here to see me. We could do nothing with him. He was quite determinedly loyal to Miss O'Shaughnessy. Well, sir, Wilmer followed him back to his hotel and did what he did.
That sounds all right. Now Jacoby.
Captain Jacoby's death was entirely Miss O'Shaughnessy's fault.
Never mind that now. Tell me what happened.
Just as you say, sir. Well, Cairo, as you know, got in touch with me. I sent for him. After he left police headquarters the night or morning, he was up here. We recognize the mutual advantage of pooling forces. Mr. Cairo is a man of nice judgment. The Paloma was his thought. He had heard in Hong Kong that Jacoby and Miss O'Shaughnessy had been seen together. Well, sir, when he saw the notice of arrival in the paper, he guessed just what had happened. She had given the bird to Jacoby to bring here for her. Jacoby did not know what it was, of course. Miss O'Shaughnessy is too discreet for that. Mr. Cairo and Wilmer and I went to call on Captain Jacoby and were fortunate enough to arrive while Miss O'Shaughnessy was there. In many ways, it was a difficult conference. But finally, by midnight, we had persuaded Miss O'Shaughnessy to come to terms. Or so we thought. We then left the boat and set out for my hotel, where I was to pay Miss O'Shaughnessy and receive the bird. Well, sir, we mere men should have known better than to suppose ourselves capable of coping with her. En route, she and Captain Jacoby and the Falcon slipped completely through our fingers. By gad, sir, it was neatly done.
Spade looked at the girl.
Her eyes, large and dark with pleading, met his.
You touched off the boat before you left?
Not intentionally, no, sir. Though I dare say we, or Wilmer, at least, were responsible for the fire. He had been out trying to find the Falcon while the rest of us were talking in the cabin, and no doubt was careless with matches.
That's fine. If any slip-up makes it necessary for us to try him for Jacoby's murder, we can also hang an arson rap on him. All right. Now about the shooting.
Well, sir, we dashed around town all day trying to find them, and found them at last late this afternoon. We weren't sure at first that we'd caught up with them. All we were sure of was that we'd come upon Miss O'Shaughnessy's apartment. But when we listened at the door, we heard them moving around inside, so we were pretty confident that we had them and rang the bell. When she asked us who we were, we told her, through the door, we heard a window going up. We knew what that meant, of course. So, Wilmer hurried downstairs as fast as he could and around the rear of the building to cover the fire escape. And when he turned into the alley, he ran right plumb smack into Captain Jacoby, running away with the Falcon under his arm. That was a difficult situation to handle, but Wilmer did every bit as well as he could. He shot Jacoby, more than once. But Jacoby was too tough either to fall or drop the Falcon, and he was too close for Wilmer to keep out of his way. He knocked Wilmer down and ran on, and this was in broad daylight, you understand, in the afternoon. When Wilmer got up, he could see a policeman approaching from the block below, so he had to give it up. He dodged into the open back door of the building next to the coronet, through into the street, and then up to join us, and very fortunate he was, sir, to make it without being seen. Well, sir, there we were, stumped again. Miss O'Shaughnessy had opened the door for Mr. Cairo and me after she had shut the window behind Jacoby, and she, we persuaded, that is the word, sir, we persuaded her to tell us that she had Jacoby take the Falcon to you. It seemed very unlikely that he'd live to go that far, even if the police didn't pick him up, but that was the only chance we had, sir. And so once more we persuaded Miss O'Shaughnessy to give us a little assistance. We persuaded her to phone your office in an attempt to draw you away before Jacoby got there, and we sent Wilmer after him. Unfortunately, it had taken us too long to decide and to persuade Miss O'Shaughnessy to cooperate with us, and so you had the Falcon before we could reach you.
And boy, Wilmer put one foot on the floor, raised himself on an elbow, opened his eyes wide, put the other foot down, sat up and looked around. And his eyes focused on Spade, bewilderment went out of them.
Cairo left his armchair and went over to the boy. He put his arm on the boy's shoulder and started to say something.
The boy rose quickly to his feet, shaking Cairo's arm off. He glanced around the room once and then fixed his eyes on Spade again. His face was set hard and he held his body so tense that it seemed drawn in and shrunken.
Now listen, kid. If you come over here and start cutting up, I'm going to kick you in the face. Sit down and shut up and behave, and you'll last longer.
Well, Wilmer, I'm sorry indeed to lose you, and I want you to know that I couldn't be any fonder of you if you were my own son. But, well, by gad, if you lose a son, it's possible to get another. And there's only one Maltese Falcon.
Cairo moved over and whispered in the boy's ear.
The boy, keeping his cold hazel eyes on Gutman's face, sat down on the sofa again.
Levantine sat beside him.
When you're young, you simply don't understand things.
Say, Precious, I think it'd be swell if you'd see what you can find us to eat in the kitchen. Plenty of coffee, will you? I don't like to leave my guests.
Surely.
Just a moment, my dear. Hadn't you better leave the envelope in here with me? You don't want to get grease spots on it.
The girl's eyes questioned Spade.
It's still his.
She put her hand inside her coat, took out the envelope, and gave it to Spade.
Take it, Gutman. Sit on it. You're afraid of losing it.
Oh, you misunderstand. It's not that at all, but business should be transacted in a businesslike manner. For instance, There are only 9 bills here now. There were 10 when I handed it to you, as you very well know.
Well?
She shook her head sideways with emphasis.
I want to know about this. The lady and I are going in the bathroom. The door will be open and I'll be facing it. Unless you want a 3-story drop, there's no way out of here except past the bathroom door. Don't try to make it.
Really, sir, it's not necessary. It's certainly not very courteous of you to threaten us in this manner. You must know that we've not the least desire to leave.
I'll know a lot when I'm through. This trick upsets things. I've got to find the answer. It won't take long. Come on.
In the bathroom, Bridget O'Shaughnessy found words. She put her hands up flat on Spade's chest and her face up close to his and whispered, I did not take that bill, Sam.
I don't think you did. But I've got to know. Take your clothes off.
You won't take my word for it?
No, take your clothes off.
I won't.
All right. We'll go back to the other room, and I'll have them taken off.
You would?
I will. I've got to know what happened to that bill. I'm not going to be held up by anybody's maidenly modesty.
Oh, well, it isn't that. I'm not ashamed to be naked before you, but can't you see? Not like this. Can't you see that if you make me, you'll be killing something?
I don't know anything about that. I've got to know what happened to the bill. Take them off.
She looked at his unblinking yellow-gray eyes, and her face became pink, and then white again. She drew herself up tall and began to undress.
He sat on the side of the bathtub, watching her and the open door.
She removed her clothes swiftly, without fumbling, letting them fall down on the floor around her feet. There.
Thanks. Now I know.
Find it?
No, I didn't find it. You palmed it.
I palmed it?
Yes. Do you want to say so? Or do you want to stand for a frisk?
Stand for a...
You're going to admit it. I'm going to search you. There's no third way.
My God. I believe you would. I really do. You're a character, sir, if you don't mind my saying so.
You palmed it.
Yes, sir. That I did. Here. I'll return it to the envelope for you. I must have my little joke every now and then, and I was curious to know what you'd do in a situation of that sort. I must say that you passed the test with flying colors, sir. It's never occurred to me that you'd hit on such a simple and direct way of getting at the truth.
That's the kind of thing I'd expect from somebody the punk's age.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy, dressed again, came out of the bathroom, took a step towards the living room, turned around, went to the kitchen, and turned on the light.
Cairo edged closer to the boy on the sofa and began whispering in his ear again.
The boy shrugged irritably.
Spade, looking at the pistols in his hand and then at Gutman, went out into the passageway to the closet there. He opened the door, put the pistols inside on top of a trunk, shut the door, locked it, put the key in his trousers pocket, and went to the kitchen door.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy was filling an aluminum percolator.
Find everything?
Yes. You shouldn't have done that to me, Sam.
I had to find out, Angel. He bent down, kissed her mouth lightly, and returned to the living room.
Gutman smiled at Spade and offered him the white envelope. This will soon be yours. You might as well take it now.
There's plenty of time for that. We haven't done enough talking about the money end. I ought to have more than $10,000.
$10,000 is a lot of money.
You're quoting me, but it's not all the money in the world.
No, sir, it's not. I grant you that. But it's a lot of money to be picked up in as few days and as easily as you're getting it.
You think it's been so damn easy? Well, maybe. But that's my business.
It certainly is. Are you, sharing with her?
That's my business, too.
It certainly is, but I'd like to give you a word of advice.
Go ahead.
If you don't... I dare say you'll give her some money in any event, but if you don't give her as much as she thinks she ought to have, my word of advice is, be careful.
Bad?
Bad.
Spade grinned and began to roll a cigarette.
Cairo, still muttering in the boy's ear, had put his arm around the boy's shoulders again.
Suddenly the boy pushed his arm away and turned on the sofa to face the Levantine. The boy's face held disgust and anger. He made a fist of one small hand and struck Cairo's mouth with it.
Cairo cried out as a woman might have cried and drew back to the very end of the sofa. He took a silk handkerchief from his pocket and put it to his mouth. It came away daubed with blood.
Keep away from me.
Cairo's handkerchief released the fragrance of sheep rye into the room.
Cairo's cry had brought Bridget O'Shaughnessy to the door.
The course of true love. How's the food coming along?
It's coming.
Let's talk about money.
Willingly, sir, with all my heart. But I may as well tell you frankly right now that 10,000 is every cent I can raise.
I ought to have 20.
I wish you could. I'd give it to you gladly if I had it, but $10,000 is every cent I can manage, on my word of honor. Of course, sir, you understand. That is simply the first payment. Later.
Yeah. I know you'll give me $1 million later. But let's stick to the first payment now. $15,000?
Mr. Spade, I've told you frankly and candidly, on my word of honor as a gentleman, that $10,000 is all the money I've got, every penny, and all I can raise.
But you didn't say positively.
Positively.
That's not any too good. But if it's the best you can do, give it to me.
Here.
Spade counted the bills. Was putting them in his pocket when...
Bridget O'Shaughnessy came in carrying a tray.
The boy did not eat.
Cairo took a cup of coffee.
The girl...
Gutman...
and Spade...
ate the scrambled eggs, bacon, toast, and marmalade she had prepared, and drank two cups of coffee apiece.
Then they settled down to wait the rest of the night through.
At 7 o'clock, Spade went to the telephone and called Effie Parai's number. Hello, Miss Parai. This is Mr. Spade. Will you let me talk to Effie, please? Yes, it is. Thanks. Hello, Angel. Sorry to get you up. Yes, very. Here's the plot. In our Holland box at the post office, you'll find an envelope addressed in my scribble. There's a Pickwick stage parcel room check in it for the bundle we got yesterday. Will you get the bundle and bring it to me, PDQ? Yes, I'm home. That's the girl. Hustle. Bye.
The street doorbell rang at 8:10.
Spade pressed the button that released the lock.
Presently, Effie Perrine, carrying the brown wrapped parcel, came from the elevator. Her boyish face was gay and bright, and she came forward quickly, almost trotting. After one glance, she did not look at Gutman. She smiled at Spade and gave him the parcel.
Thanks a lot, lady. I'm sorry to spoil your day of rest, but this...
It's not the first one you've spoiled. Anything else?
No, thanks.
Bye-bye.
Spade carried the parcel into the living room.
Gutman's face was red and his cheeks quivered.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy came to the table as Spade put the parcel there.
They were excited.
The boy rose, pale and tense, but he remained by the sofa, staring under curling lashes at the others.
There you are.
Ah, now, after 17 years...
Cairo licked his red lips and worked his hands together.
The girl's lower lip was between her teeth.
It's it. But we'll make sure. Gutman set the bird down on the table again and fumbled at a pocket. Sweat glistened on his round cheeks. His fingers twitched as he took out a gold pocket knife and opened it.
Spade stood back a little where he could watch the boy as well as the group at the table.
Black enamel came off in tiny curls, exposing blackened metal beneath. Gutman's knife blade bit into the metal, turning back a thin, curved shaving. The inside of the shaving and the narrow plane its removal had left had the soft gray sheen of lead.
It's a fake.
All right, Precious. You've had your little joke. Now tell us about it.
No, Sam, no. That is the one I got from Kemedov. I swear.
That's it. That's it. It was a Russian. I should have known. What a fool we thought of him. And what a fool he made of us. You bugged it. You and your stupid attempt to buy it from him! You fat fool! You let him know it was valuable, and he found out it was valuable and made a duplicate for us! No wonder he had little trouble stealing it. No wonder he was so willing to send me off around the world looking for it. You imbecile! You blunted idiot!
Gutman's jaw sagged. He blinked vacant eyes. Then he shook himself and was, by the time his bulbs had stopped jouncing, again a jovial fat man.
Come, sir, there's no need of going on like that. Everybody errs at times, and you may be sure this is every bit as severe a blow to me as to anyone else. Yes, that is the Russian's hand. Ha, ha, there's no doubt of it. Well, sir, what do you suggest? Shall we stand here and shed tears and call each other names? Or shall we go to Constantinople?
You are...
For 17 years I have wanted that little item, and have been trying to get it. If I must spend another year on the quest, well, sir, that will be an additional expenditure in time of only 5 15/17%.
I'll go with you.
Spade suddenly released the girl's wrist and looked around the room. The boy was not there. Spade went into the passageway. The hall door stood open. Spade made a dissatisfied mouth, shut the door, and returned to the living room. Well, sir, I must say you're a swell lot of thieves.
We've little enough to boast about, and that's a fact, sir. But, well, we're none of us dead yet, and there's not a bit of use thinking the world's come to an end just because we've run into a little setback. I'll have to ask you for that envelope, sir.
I held up my hand. You got your dingus. It's your hard luck, not mine, that it wasn't what you wanted.
No, come, sir. We've all failed, and there's no reason for expecting any one of us to bear the brunt of it.
Sam, he's pulled a gun.
In short, sir, I must ask you to return my $10,000.
Spade's face did not change. He shrugged and took the envelope from his pocket. He started to hold it out to Gutman, hesitated, opened the envelope, and took out $1,000 bill. That'll take care of my time and expenses.
Reasonable enough, sir. Now, sir, we will say goodbye to you, unless you care to undertake the Constantinople expedition with us. You don't? Well, sir, frankly, I'd like to have you along. You're a man to my liking, a man of many resources and nice judgment. Because we know you're a man of nice judgment, we know we can say goodbye with every assurance that you'll hold the details of our little enterprise in confidence. We know we can count on you to appreciate the fact that, as the situation now stands, any legal difficulties that come to us in connection with these last few days would likewise and equally come to you and the charming Miss O'Shaughnessy. You're too shrewd not to recognize that, sir, I'm sure.
I understand that.
I was sure you would. I'm also sure that, now there's no alternative, you'll somehow manage the police without a fall guy.
I'll make out all right.
I was sure you would. Well, sir, the shortest farewells are the best. Adieu. And to you, Miss O'Shaughnessy, adieu. I leave you the rara avis on the table as a little memento.
For all of 5 minutes after the outer door had closed behind Casper Gutman and Joel Cairo, Spade, motionless, stood staring at the knob of the open living room door.
Bridget O'Shaughnessy stood by the table, looking with uneasy eyes at him.
Hello, Sergeant Polehouse there. Will you call him, please? This is Samuel Spade. Hello, Tom, I've got something for you. Yes, plenty. Here it is. Thursby and Jacoby were shot by a kid named Wilmer Cook, about 5'7". Crazy eyes, coat too big for him. He's working for a man named Casper Gutman. Big fat guy, middle-aged, can't miss him. That fellow Cairo you met here is in with them, too. Gutman's staying at the Alexandria, Suite 12C, or was. They've just left here and they're blowing town, so you'll have to move fast. But I don't think they're expecting a pinch. There's a girl in it, too, Gutman's daughter. Small, slender, maybe 17, good-looking. Watch yourself when you go up against the kid. He's supposed to be pretty good with a gun. That's right, Tom, and I've got some stuff here for you, too. I think I've got the guns he used. That's right. Step on it. Luck to you. They'll talk when they're nailed. About us. We're sitting on dynamite. We've only got minutes to get set for the police. Give me all of it, fast. Gutman sent you and Cairo to Constantinople.
She started to speak, hesitated,
and bit her lip.
Goddamn you talk! He sent you to Constantinople!
Yes. Yes, he sent me. I met Joe there and asked him to help me. Then we...
Wait! You asked Cairo to help you get it from the Russian?
Yes.
For Gutman?
No, not then. We thought we would get it for ourselves.
All right, then.
Oh, then I began to be afraid that Joe wouldn't play fair with me, so I asked Floyd Thursby to help me.
And he did. Well?
Well, we got it and went to Hong Kong.
With Cairo? Or had you ditched him before that?
Yes. We left him in Constantinople, in jail. Something about a check.
Something you fixed up to hold him there?
Yes.
Right. Now you and Thursby are in Hong Kong with the bird.
Yes, and then... I didn't know him very well. I didn't know whether I could trust him. I thought it would be safer. Anyway, I met Captain Jacoby, and I knew his boat was coming here. So I asked him to bring a package for me, and that was the bird. I wasn't sure I could trust Thursby, or that Joe, or somebody working for Gutman might not be on the boat we came on, and that seemed the safest plan.
All right. Then you and Thursby caught one of the fast boats over. Then what?
Then I was afraid of Gutman. I knew he had people, connections, everywhere, and that he'd soon know what we had done. And I was afraid he'd have learned that we had left Hong Kong for San Francisco. He was in New York, and I knew that if he had heard that by cable, he would have plenty of time to get here by the time we did, or before. He did. I didn't know that then, but I was afraid of it. And I had to wait here until Captain Jacoby's boat arrived. And I was afraid Gutman would find me, or find Floyd, and buy him over. And that's why I came to you and asked you to watch him.
That's a lie! You had Thursby hooked, and you knew it. He was a sucker for women. His record shows that. The only falls he took were over women. Once a chump, always a chump. Maybe you didn't know his record, but you'd know you had him safe.
She blushed and looked timidly at him.
You wanted to get him out of the way before Jacoby came with the loot. What was your scheme?
I knew he'd left the States with a gambler after some trouble. I didn't know what it was, but I thought that if it was anything serious, and he saw a detective watching him, he'd think it was on account of the old trouble, and would be frightened into going away. I didn't think...
You told him he was being shadowed. Miles hadn't any brains, but he wasn't clumsy enough to be spotted the first night.
I told him, yes. When we went out for a walk that night, I pretended to discover Mr. Archer following us, and pointed him out to Floyd. But please, believe, Sam, that I wouldn't have done it if I thought Floyd would kill him. I thought he'd be frightened into leaving the city. I didn't think for a minute he'd shoot him like that.
If you thought he wouldn't, you were right, sweetheart.
What?
Thursby didn't shoot him. Miles hadn't any brains. But Christ, he had too many years' experience as a detective to be caught like that by the man he was shadowing. Up a blind alley with his gun tucked away on his hip and his overcoat buttoned? Not a chance. He was dumb, but not dumb enough for that. But he'd have gone in there with you, Angel, if he was sure nobody else was up there. You were his client, so we would have no reason for not dropping the shadow on your say-so. And if you caught up with him and asked him to go up there, he'd have gone. He was just dumb enough for that. He'd have looked you up and down and licked his lips and gone grinning from ear to ear. And then you could have stood as close to him as you liked in the dark and put a hole through him with the gun you got from Thursby that evening.
Don't talk to me like that, Sam. You know I didn't. You know.
Stop it! The police will be blowing in here any minute now. And we're sitting on dynamite. Talk!
Why do you accuse me of such a...
The pair of us are sitting under the gallows. I'll talk!
How did you know he licked his lips and looked...
I knew Miles. But never mind that. Why did you shoot him?
I didn't mean to at first. I didn't, really. I meant what I told you, but when I saw Floyd couldn't be frightened, I got...
That's a lie! You asked Miles and me to handle it ourselves. You wanted to be sure the Shadower was somebody you knew, and who knew you, so they'd go with you. You got the gun from Thursby that day, that night. You had already rented the apartment at the Coronet. You had trunks there, and none at the hotel. And when I looked the apartment over, I found a rent receipt, dated 5 or 6 days before the time you told me you rented it.
Yes, yes, that's a lie, Sam. I did intend to if Floyd... Oh, I can't look at you and tell you this, Sam. I knew Floyd wouldn't easily be frightened. but I thought that if he knew somebody was shadowing him, he'd either... I can't say it,
you
Sam.
You thought Floyd would tackle him, and one or the other of them would go down. If Thursby was the one, then you were rid of him. If Miles was, then you could see that Floyd was caught and you'd be rid of him. That it?
Something like...
When you found out that Thursby didn't mean to tackle him, you borrowed the gun and did it yourself, right?
Yes, though not exactly.
But exact enough! And you had the plan up your sleeve from the first. You thought Floyd would be nailed for the killing.
I thought they'd hold him at least until after Captain Jacoby had arrived with the Falcon, and
then... And you didn't know then that Gutman was here hunting for you. You didn't suspect that, or you wouldn't have shaken your gunman. You knew Gutman was here as soon as you heard Thursby had been shot. Then you knew you needed another protector. So you came back to me, right?
Yes. But, oh, sweetheart, it wasn't only that. I would have come back to you sooner or later. From the first instant I saw you, I knew...
You, Angel. Well, if you get a good break, you'll be out of San Quentin in 20 years. You can come back to me then. I hope to Christ they don't hang you, Precious, by that sweet neck.
You're not...
I'm going to send you over. Chances are you'll get off with life. That means you'll be out again in 20 years. You're an angel. I'll wait for you. If they hang you, I'll always remember you.
Don't, Sam. Don't say that even in fun. You frightened me for a moment. I really thought you do such wild and unpredictable things that...
Don't be silly. You're taking the fall. One of us has got to take it after the talking those birds will do. They'd hang me, sure. You're likely to get a better break. Well?
But Sam, you can't. Not after what we've been to each other, you can't.
Like hell I can't.
What? That? You've been playing with me? Only pretending you cared? To trap me like this? You didn't care at all? You didn't... You don't love me?
I think I do. What of it? I'm not Thursby. I'm not Jacoby. I won't play the sap for you.
That is not just. It's unfair. It's contemptible of you. You know it was not that. You can't say that.
Like hell I can't. You came into my bed to stop me asking questions. You led me out yesterday for Gutman with that phony call for help. Last night you came here with them and waited outside for me and came in with me. You were in my arms when the trap was sprung. I couldn't have gone for a gun if I'd had one on me, and couldn't have made a fight of it even if I'd wanted to. If they didn't take you away with them, it was only because Gutman's got too much sense to trust you, except for short stretches when he has to, and because he thought I'd play the sap for you. And not wanting to hurt you, wouldn't be able to hurt him.
You called me a liar? Now you're lying. You're lying. If you say you don't know down in your heart, in spite of anything I've done, I love you.
Maybe I do. What of it? I should trust you? You, who arranged that nice little trick for my predecessor, Thursby. You, who knocked off Miles. A man you had nothing against, in cold blood, just like swatting a fly. For the sake of double-crossing Thursby. You, who double-crossed Gutman, Cairo, Thursby.
No.
One, two, three. You, who've never played square with me for half an hour at a stretch since I've known you. I should trust you? No, darling. I wouldn't do it even if I could. And why should I?
Why should you? If you've been playing with me, if you don't love me, there's no answer to that. If you did, no answer would be needed.
I don't care who loves who. I'm not going to play the sap for you. I won't walk in Thursby and Christ know who else's footsteps. You killed Miles and you're going over for it. I could have helped you by letting the others go and standing off the police the best way I could. It's too late for that now. I can't help you now. And I wouldn't if I could.
Don't help me then. But don't hurt me. Let me go away now.
No! I'm sunk if I haven't got you to hand over to the police when they come. That's the only thing that can keep me from going down with the others.
You won't do that for me?
I won't play the sap for you.
Don't keep saying that, please. Why must you do this to me, Sam? Surely Mr. Archer wasn't as much to you as...
Miles was a son of a bitch. I found that out the first week we were in business together, and I meant to kick him out as soon as the year was up. You didn't do me a damn bit of harm by killing him.
Then what?
Listen, this isn't a damn bit of good. You'll never understand me. But I'll try once more, and then we'll give up. When a man's partner is killed, he's supposed to do something about it. It doesn't make any difference what you thought of him. He was your partner, and you're supposed to do something about it. Then it happens we were in the detective business. Well, when one of your organization gets killed, it's bad business to let the killer get away with it. It's bad all around. Bad for that one organization. Bad for every detective everywhere. Third, I'm a detective. And expecting me to run criminals down and then let them go free is like asking a dog to catch a rabbit and then let it go. It can be done all right, and sometimes it is done. But it's not the natural thing. The only way I could have let you go was by letting Gutman and Cairo and the kid go, and that's...
No, you're not serious. You don't expect me to think that these things you're saying are sufficient reason for sending me to the...
Wait till I'm through, and then you can talk. Fourth, no matter what I wanted to do now, it would be absolutely impossible for me to let you go without having dragged myself to the gallows with the others. Next, I have no reason in God's world to think I can trust you. And if I did this and got away with it, you'd have something on me that you could use whenever you happen to want to. That's five of them. The sixth would be that, since I've also got something on you, I couldn't be sure you wouldn't decide to shoot a hole in me someday. Seventh, I don't even like the idea of thinking that there might be one chance in 100 that you'd played me for a sucker. And eighth, but that's enough. All those to one side. Maybe some of them are unimportant. I won't argue about that, but look at the number of them. On the other side, what have we got? All we've got is the fact that maybe you love me and maybe I love you.
You know whether you do or not.
I don't. It's easy enough to be nuts about you, but I don't know what it amounts to. Does anybody ever? I suppose I do. What of it? Next month I won't. Maybe. I've been through it before when it lasted that long. Then what? Then I'll think I played the sap. And if I did it and get sent over, then I'd be sure I was the sap. Well, if I send you over, I'll be sorry as hell, Angel. I'll have some rotten nights. But that'll pass. Listen, if that doesn't mean anything to you, forget it, and we'll make it this. I won't because all of me wants to. Wants to say hell with the consequences and do it. And because, goddammit, you've counted on that with me the same as you counted on that with the others.
She put her hands up to his cheeks and drew his face down. Look at me and tell me the truth. Would you have done this to me if the Falcon had been real and you had been paid your money?
What difference does that make now? Don't be too sure I'm as crooked as I'm supposed to be. That kind of reputation might be good business, bringing in high-priced jobs and making it easier to deal with the enemy. Well, a lot of money would have been at least one more item on the other side of the scales.
If you love me, you need nothing more on that side.
I won't play the sap for you.
She put her mouth to his, slowly, her arms around him, and came into his arms.
Spade, left arm around Bridget O'Shaughnessy, opened the corridor door.
Lieutenant Dundee and...
Detective Sergeant Tom Polehouse were there.
Hello, Tom. You get them?
Got them.
Swell. Come on in. Here's another one for you. She killed Miles. I've got some exhibits. The boy's guns, one of Cairo's, a black statue that all the hell was about, and $1,000 bill that I was supposed to be bribed with. What the hell's the matter with your little playmate, Tom? He looks heartbroken. I bet by God when he heard Gutman's story, he thought he had me at last.
Cut it out, Sam. We didn't think...
Like hell he didn't. He came up here with his mouth watering. You'd have sense enough to know I've been stringing Gutman.
Knock it off, Sam. Anyways, we didn't get it from Gutman. We got it from Cairo.
Gutman's dead. The kid had just finished shooting him up when we got there.
He ought to have expected that. Morning, Angel.
Is that what the papers have? Is that right?
Yes, ma'am. So much for your woman's intuition.
You did that, Sam. To her?
You're Sam's detective. She did kill Miles, Angel. Offhand. Just like that.
Don't. Please, don't touch me. I know. I know you're right. You're right. But don't touch me now. Not now.
All right.
I'll see who that is. Iva is here.
Yes. Well, send her in.
You have been listening to the Hollywood Theater of the Ear production of The Maltese Falcon, based on the novel by Dashiell Hammett. You have heard Michael Madsen as Sam Spade, Sandra Oh as Bridget O'Shaughnessy, Edward Herman as Casper Gutman, Michael Sod as Joel Cairo and Miles Archer, Armin Shimmerman as Wilmer Cook, Laura Gardner as Effie Perrine, Iva Archer, and Rhea Gutman, Tom Tolles as Tom Polhouse, Keith Zarabica as Luke and Lieutenant Dundee, and Ira Burton as Sid Wise. Josh Stanton was executive producer for this production, which was dramatized, produced, and directed by Yuri Rosovsky, recorded by Andrew Meissner, and edited and mixed by Andrew Barnes and Aura Johnson. Amy Lieberman was casting director, Keith Allen Deutsch editorial director, and Lorna Raver production coordinator. Music by Steve Everett, Teddy Lasry, James McConnell, and Debbie Weissman. This production is being published by arrangement with the Gelfman Schneider Literary Agents, Inc., and was produced in 2008 by Blackstone Audio, which holds the copyright. Neither this recording nor any portion of it may be reproduced or used for any purpose without prior written authorization from Blackstone Audio. And I am Robertson Dean. If you would like to obtain a complete catalog of our titles or our monthly update telling you about new releases and our new collection of books on CD and MP3 CD, write Blackstone Audio, Post Office Box 969, Ashland, Oregon, 97520. You may also obtain the same information from our award-winning website. Our address, all one word, is www.blackstoneaudio.com. Thank you.